It's Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee on a beautiful Tuesday. We got stuff to talk about. We had a weekend. There was a weekend full of things that people have been talking about.
But before you get there, so one of the live group members said it's the podcast within the podcast.
It is.
That's the value.
Two for one podcast.
That's the value by joining the live group. Like, that's what you pay for. You pay for the inside scoop. You pay for tea that's so hot.
Oh yeah.
It can't be on the regular
way. It's so hot, we've waited months for it to cool down so we can disperse it to people. So as we get closer, it's cooling. It's in its cooling phase right now.
Otherwise it might set you on fire. It's that hot.
It could.
Outside of a Trump hearing.
All right. You know? Oh God, I forgot about that one already.
Magoo just reminded us of it.
About the dude set himself on fire. That's crazy. At first I thought it was like a crazy Trump supporter who was, you know, self-immolating to protest Trump being on trial, but that wasn't the case at all. Apparently the guy had some wild theory. Get this. This guy said that all of these politicians, Republicans and Democrat, are actually just working together for the same goals, and that they're all basically the same at the end of the day.
So this was...
Dude's nuts.
This is a libertarian.
Crazy, dude.
Setting himself on fire, of course.
So, yeah, I forgot to bring up that manifesto and talk about that today. We'll talk about the other crazy things going on around... I'm a little bit happy to see this one. No, I mean, it is like the downfall of Western society, but I'm a little happy to see this happening on college campuses now around the country, because as you know, as I've been saying for probably a couple of years now, if the government wanted to fully fund anything, I would just do colleges, because they need to be destroyed, and that's one of the fastest ways to do such a thing.
Yeah.
And when I see colleges ripping themselves apart, I get a little happy about it. I do.
Yeah.
Even though it is sad that we have to share space with some of these people.
See, this is why I want, like, places like California, like, just pass everything, you know? Give them what they want. It'll implode on itself quick enough. And then we can get to liberty.
Fact check, by the way, Magoo says the guy's an anarcho-communist. I haven't looked at the manifesto. I just heard a little bit about what he had to say about some politicians. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
He's not wrong about that.
Yeah, I'm not going to set myself on fire, but I agree with that statement right there. Columbia
Maybe
University.
He agrees even more, though.
Columbia, you know, there's this war going on in Israel, Palestine.
Yeah, we just gave them money.
Yeah, we got to send them some money. And so that's going on. Students at Columbia University, they're not happy about this. They had some protests and occupation going on over the weekend. They have their own Chaz Chop scenario happening right now.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
And we got some videos and stuff like that. It's pretty crazy.
I forgot about Chaz Chop.
Seems to be like some legitimate anti-Semitism, you know, anti-Semitic is a way overused term. And the problem with overusing these terms is that it becomes meaningless to call people anything.
Like racist.
Racist, anti-Semite, white supremacist, whatever it is you want to call someone, it doesn't mean anything anymore. But when people use it in relation to some of these people, it seems to be the case, okay? But they've canceled their in-person classes for today, and I think they'll have to keep doing this, but we'll see. Columbia University cancels in-person classes after pro-Palestinian protest. They will attend classes virtually on Monday as school officials hope to de-escalate the tensions on the New York City campus after pro-Palestinian demonstrations led to mass arrests last week. In a statement on Monday, Columbia's president said the university was canceling while denouncing anti-Semitic language and intimidating and harassing behavior that she said occurred on campus recently, still like happening right now. Quote, these tensions have been exploited and amplified by individuals who are not affiliated with Columbia, who have come to campus to pursue their own agendas. So what they're saying is these are outside infiltrators that have infiltrated this peaceful movement of non-anti-Semitic people. It's going on right now. More than 100 pro-Palestinian protesters were arrested on Thursday on the campus after Shafiq, that's the president, authorized New York police to clear an encampment set up by students demonstrating against Israel's actions in Gaza.
So they took apart Chaz Chop.
Yeah. No, they haven't taken it apart. Let's look at some of the stuff. So this is a video posted by Daily Wire, posted this one out. This is, let's see. Now, their caption on this says, these are the student loans you get to pay off. And I do think that that's an important part of this conversation. Like, you look at what's going on at these colleges. It's not valuable. There's nothing valuable for society that society's helping pay for at this, you know, $60,000 a year college campus that people are going to.
And these same people are going to wonder why they can't get jobs when they graduate.
Their degree is worthless. 8-second video, bunch of tents set up. There's a sign that says, "Welcome to the People's University for Palestine." right there in front of that important looking building. I know nothing about this campus whatsoever. So welcome to the People's University for Palestine. Let's see what else we got. Okay, so we got some
Allah Akbar
is going on there. Oh, mm-hmm. that's good stuff. Let's see what else we got. We got a couple videos here. Jewish students get harassed trying to leave Columbia's campus tonight. You can hear someone yell, how would you say that? Yehudim. 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 That's how they said it. Yehudim. Possibly. Jews. And then saying, go back to Poland. And this is where the actual seemingly anti-Semitic stuff. Now, they would say it's anti-Zionism. Is probably what these people would call it. But I wouldn't look at every single Jew and say that they're a Zionist any more than I would look at every single one of these pro-Palestine, what if they're Palestinian or what if they're from the Middle East? I wouldn't look at them and call them terrorists either. You know, that seems kind of racist or whatever you want to call it. But I mean, imagine if you just had if you flipped it and it was a bunch of Jews out there blockading Middle Easterners from going to the college and telling them to go back to fight for Hamas or go back to Gaza or what, you know, go back. I mean, that would be bad. Seems like people would be upset about that kind of thing. So here's a little bit of that.
Go back to Poland!
Oh my God! Help!
Go back to Poland! Go back to Poland!
Go back in! Go back in!
All right. So that's fun times. You got to go get that college experience, man. It's good stuff. Here's a little bit more. Come on. Now, this person yells, stop killing children, and in addition, you know, to all the go back to Poland stuff. And at the same time, I would say yet again, I highly doubt any of the Jewish students that they're following and harassing have killed any children. I mean, I don't know that for sure. I haven't looked at them.
And I thought Palestinians aren't Hamas.
They're not.
So don't you separate the government from the people? You know?
For Palestinians, you do, but you see... What you're forgetting is the remember that totem pole and the victimhood hierarchy? Hey, quiet.
And the goose says, so now it's a pro-life rally.
Stop. Yeah. That's what it was. She was just anti-abortion. That was the thing going on there. Okay, and then we have, let's see, students at Yale. Now, this is spreading across college campuses, much like Facebook did back in the day.
Cancer.
Students at Yale preventing another Jewish student from entering. I think we have two situations with the same guy here.
What does the vest give you, like, as far as...
There's the alleged Jewish guy right here.
Shift in a straight line.
What is the best?
Now, what you see in this video, if you're just listening, is they have formed a line of people, then they're not letting him through. He's trying to get around them. How do you know he's trying to get around them when we have another angle of this guy? And these children, they make me very upset. And I try to not feel such terrible, awful, negative things for people, but I do sometimes. And some of the things that these people say, he's trying to go somewhere and they're like, well, you can't just walk through us. And as he tries to go around, they move as a group and continue blocking him. And they're the victim.
Yeah.
They are the victim if he tries to go through them.
And they look like white liberals.
You're literally touching us.
I'm allowed to walk.
That's fine. I'm not going to do that. We're not going to do that. I'm just trying to walk around. Let me walk around.
But you can walk through us.
We're here.
Don't get in my way.
Oh, how I just walk right through them. How I would clear a path,
my God,
for this man to walk.
Yeah, that exchange right there gets my blood boiling.
I know. I kind of just want to go up there and just clear a path.
Like, I'm just trying to walk around. You can't just walk through us. And as he tries to go around, they stay with him and continue to block him. And he's like,
oh, so you're saying they're moving the goalposts?
Yeah, they're just this perpetual like. And they make themselves the victim, like he would be violating their rights by trying to walk through them, but they're the ones that are following him around, blocking him. I mentioned this a bunch of times. There's a book, a collection of Ayn Rand essays called The Return of the Primitive. And I want everyone to go read this, get it on Audible or whatever. In that book, one of the essays, you could just find this essay if you want to, and it's called The Cashing In, The Student Rebellion. It talks about the Berkeley Rebellion, which I believe happened in the 70s, I think, or maybe late 60s. I don't know which one. And she very clearly talks about how they kind of flipped rights on their head, because they would go and take microphones from people and say that they had a right to speak while taking other people's right to speak, or they would block people from going. It's like the same thing happening right now. And she talked about how the way that the college handled this was by like giving in to all of their demands instead of just expelling every single one of them and telling them to go buy a first class ticket to F themselves somewhere, you know, which is what they should have done.
Well, and that's what this one girl was saying. Like, you can't touch us. You can't. He's like, I'm not. I'm trying to walk around. You keep moving.
And then we get to the crowd chanting, and you know how I feel about crowd chanting. Mm. It's one of my least favorite things in the history of the world.
Well, this is how stoning happened. You know, you get a crowd together, then everybody would pick up a stone.
These are people that are forming a line, and there's someone telling them what to say. And the way that they're talking, they sound like they're under some form of hypnosis, honestly. And that's like psychosis, maybe. A massive amount of people have formed this line, and it seems like they're under some massive form of psychosis. I don't know if there's a name. I don't know if there's a name for it.
I don't know if that's been studied.
I don't think anyone's ever talked about that before, but it did get us a strike on YouTube one time. So here we go.
So that we can
start to push them
Out of the camp.
One step forward.
Another step forward. We ask.
That you please respect.
Our privacy.
And our community guidelines.
Which you have so far disrespected.
And leave our camp.
These people.
Our community guidelines. What, the camp they set up? Their camp guidelines?
Their camp.
She has that voice, that liberal arts voice, you know? It reminds me of the Machine story, you know? like their camp just got robbed.
They set up an encampment on university property. Now, I guess Columbia. This is a private university, I believe.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Columbia's private. I don't know.
So
I'll look it up.
They set up this camp and they set up their own community guidelines. And then they ask, now they're asking, and if you don't comply, they're just going to use force, force you to do something that you respect their privacy and yeah, their encampment
private
that they have formed on someone else's property. I don't condone violence, but I will pay to watch someone punch each one of these people in the face. I will.
Her voice alone is just like so annoying. You want to talk about a condescending tone?
Yeah.
A female condescending tone.
Which that's, is the worst kind of condescending tone, if you right ask me.
Yeah.
Because it's normally wrong.
Respect our privacy. What privacy? You set up tents on a college campus. What privacy are you speaking of? Sorry, we didn't read the rules for whatever your camp is called. We didn't know you were going to set up camp here where I usually walk to class. Usually walk through this field to class, and you've set up a home here. It's so ridiculous.
So
can we go to one of these? We should go.
This one's in New York. I don't know, but if this happens in Nashville, we should.
I mean, Vandy, go do
the, yeah, Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt gets pretty.
One of the other places.
We just had a sit-in.
Belmont.
We could have brought tampons.
Yeah.
To Vanderbilt. There you go.
That would keep the sit-in going. Yeah. You know? So I'm trying to think about how to approach this. Number one, I did say that I felt a little bit of glee from this because the colleges are doing us, they're really doing us no good. A lot of people go to college so they can teach college later on, which means it's completely worthless. But what are you going to teach at college? You're going to teach other people how to teach at college. It's a money factory for the colleges. That's all it is. A
lot of administrative costs.
Then they become leftist indoctrination camps. And so when I start to see the colleges, because this is going to harm this college quite a bit, a lot of people are not going to want to put up with this. They're not going to want to pay $60,000 to $90,000 a year to go to a college where they're having to deal with this, especially the Jews. Okay, they're not going to want to do this at all. And then there's a lot of people with money that aren't going to send money to the college or whatever. It's going to end up hurting them, which makes me happy because they deserve to reap what they have sown for all of these years.
That's biblical.
Yes.
Preach.
That's all I know right there. And there was an accident.
Yeah.
But they need to reap what they've sown. And they have been creating these people. This is a, you see those buildings back there? Those are factory buildings for churning out people like this. That is what they do. And now these people are returning to eat themselves or whatever you want to call it. Like they are eating their own at the moment. And sometimes you love to see it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do. Now, what if you flip side this for a second and talked about the fact some of these people have legitimate grievances. This is a libertarian podcast. We don't like war and we don't like the fact that there are innocent civilians getting killed in a war. And it does seem whatever numbers you go with, you could go with Gaza's numbers, which is like 35,000, should be 40 by now. I don't know what the number is right now. 35,000, something like that. They say that many of them are innocent civilians, like over half of them. Or you can go with Israel's numbers, and they're like, no, we haven't killed 35,000 or 25,000 even innocent civilians. We've killed like 15,000 innocent civilians. That's get your numbers right. That's still too many innocent civilians. I don't like that.
Yeah,
not a fan of it. I would want that to stop. I want to find whatever peaceful solution there is. And I don't think there's an easy peaceful solution when you're dealing with a terrorist organization or an ideology or whatever it is. We know this. We're Americans. We know all about how you can't defeat these ideologies. And so I don't know exactly what the answer here is. I don't think there would be much. I think as long as Israel is there, this is going to be happening. I'm not advocating for Israel to pack up and move out or anything like that. But I think as long as they're there, this is going to be happening. Some of these people have legitimate grievances because they are upset about innocent people. But the question is that what they are upset about? Or do they hate Zionism? Do they hate Israel? Are they upset about the land being stolen or whatever? Do they just hate Jews because of their religion? Or do they see them as colonizers?
What exactly are they protesting? Are they protesting the fact that the American government has sent aid to Israel? Like, is that?
I don't know what exactly sparked these protests. Because I know the president was pulled in front of Congress last week.
Don't you think they should
week.
Be protesting in Israel to get Israel to stop?
Well,
but instead they're protesting in America,
and it just
for what? For Americans to stop supporting? What is the
so?
What's the goal of the protest?
The college,
because it does seem as if at least some people's goal is just to hate Jewish people.
I think it has
or Zionism
something,
or whatever.
I think it has something to do with some of Colombia's money being tied to Israel in some way, and either helping funding or getting money from Israel, whatever they want them to divest, basically from.
But haven't we also sent aid to Gaza?
Well, yeah, there's. I think there was $9 billion in this bill that goes to Gaza somehow. I don't know how exactly it's going to get distributed or whatever, but I think you could make the argument that you just don't send the money to Israel, and then you also don't send the money to Gaza, and then you just let people keep their money. But I know I'm just being crazy when I say
you
stuff
sound
like that.
You're gonna set yourself on fire.
I know. Some crazy stuff. There's legitimate things that they could be protesting, like innocent people dying. There's legitimate things like what's Israel supposed to do after something like October 7th happens. Of course, they're going to go after the people that did it. Do I think that they could have done less of the bombing than maybe more strategic tactical things? Sure, I can say that, but I'm not in the military. I'm not in the war. I don't know anything about the situation on the ground. Can't name a single street in Gaza. So I don't know anything about that specific situation. I know I just don't like it when innocent people die, and so that's an easy thing to say. I don't like it when that happens. Protesting and blocking American Jews and stopping them from moving freely on campus or around the streets around the campus is not the way to do such a thing. It's actually a very racist type thing to do. And to assume that they're somehow tied to this government would be the same thing as assuming that you're tied to Hamas's government. And I just think that we should look at people as individuals, and that would be the way to do these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And we've moved away from looking at people as individuals, and that's why we're dealing with what we're dealing with at the moment. But if this leads to Colombia going out to business or the whole place being burnt down, hopefully no one being hurt whatsoever, I won't shed a tear about it.
Good riddance.
I just won't. And I hope it takes down the rest of the colleges too. Mm-hmm. So we just really need the technical colleges and maybe a couple others, something like that.
There will be a market solution.
More to come on Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network.
This is Mark Edge with Free Talk Live. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com is one of the best real estate agents I've ever worked with. I've been through about 24 real estate transactions in my life, and I feel like I know what I'm doing, but there's always the things that you don't know that you don't know. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com found a problem with the house that I was buying that ultimately saved me $65,000. He's a consummate professional, holds his people to his own high standards, and I would unequivocally recommend him for any real estate purchase in New Hampshire. Don't sell yourself short. Contact PorcupineRealEstate.com.
What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Remember, Charlie and I have a daily podcast called Good Morning Liberty, where we do a show every day of the week, pretty much talking about current news and events from a libertarian perspective. You can find us by going to BernieLies.com. You can join our live group by going to JoinGML.com. Speaking of wars, well, we got a $95 billion aid package that the House passed over the weekend. Some people are very happy about that, and some people are very upset about that. Here is a video of people that are very happy about that. In fact, they're people in the House of Representatives. Some people might even call them congressmen and women for the United States of America, waving a bunch of Ukrainian flags inside of the United States House. I don't even know why I'm surprised or why these things even bother me much anymore.
Yeah.
But do you follow the redheaded libertarian? She asked a good question.
This is Patreon.
Whatever her name is. Yeah, they're very patriotic. She asked a simple question, like, when's the last time you saw these people waving American flags after they do something? Like, do 9/11. We spend, like, do we? No, the answer actually was Jan 6. Oh. Inside, like, when do you see people wave American flags inside the Capitol building? You don't see that. Like, why are we waving Ukrainian flags inside of our government building, celebrating the fact that we're taking money from Americans, or we're borrowing?
What? I know
your
why.
Hands up. What's up?
I know why.
Why?
Because some of that money is going to get funneled right back into their pockets.
You think?
Oh, yes.
You think? Wait, do defense contractors donate money towards politicians?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. That's weird.
Yep.
All right, I gotcha. So they're waving these flags. I find that to be kind of weird. Here's one angle of what that looked like. I don't know. Kind of a weird thing to me. Let's go back to the story. Democrats and Republicans unite to give weapons manufacturers $59 billion. That's out of the $95 billion. So 59 out of the 95 is actually going to be going to purchase weapons from the military-industrial complex. So that's cool. The House of Representatives passed a $95 billion military spending package over the weekend, including $59 billion in weapons purchases in three separate bills. The aid package had been held up because some Republicans oppose more aid to Ukraine. Those concerns melted away after this month's Iranian-Israeli clashes. Naturally, you would support more aid to Ukraine after Iran and Israel exchanged some rockets back and forth. I follow the same line of thought, of course, as them. The Senate already passed a similar $95 billion package 2 months ago, so the new House spending bill should pass the Senate and make it to President Joe Biden's desk quickly. The House package also includes a fourth national security bill with measures that the Senate has not voted on, including the forced sale of TikTok and new economic sanctions on Iran and Russia. So this is all for national security. Mm. So we're going to do the forced sale of TikTok also. Some of these things, by the way, if they pass them, are not going to be great for Joe Biden in the election. I just wanted to point that out. Like him sending another whatever $15 billion to Israel, a lot of young people are going to be upset about that. We just showed you tapes of the young people. Okay, so a lot of people are going to be upset about this. And if they actually sign this forced sale of TikTok, if that leads to TikTok actually being banned, a lot of young people and people who aren't young probably too mm-hmm. going to be upset about this kind of thing. Quote, today, members of both parties, the House voted to advance the national security interests and send clear message about the power of American leadership on the world stage.
And not this message is not clear, but their message is clear.
Yeah. Biden declared. He declared it. Mm-hmm. So we know that that's important. The White House advertised.
Hear ye, he started.
These bills as an aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and friendly nations in the Indo-Pacific region, such as Taiwan. But the bulk of the money will go directly into the American military-industrial complex.
Wow.
So that's an important part to remember. Like, oh, yeah, we're giving money to all these countries. Well, most of it goes to these companies right here, which is why it's great for jobs. You know, someone's got to build those things.
That's right.
So the package includes $29.5 billion to replenish stockpiles of American weapons given to Ukraine that we probably said cost us $10 billion. Mm-hmm. Israel and Indo-Pacific allies, as well as another $29.5 billion for the development, production, and procurement of new weapons. The wars in Eastern Europe and Middle East have burned through stockpiles of American ammunition and missiles faster than they can be replaced. And American factories will have trouble keeping up even if more money is thrown at them. Man, I bet that supply-demand imbalance is really causing the prices to go up. You know, not corporate greed or anything. In this case, you really need that stuff for war.
It's caused by Putin.
Yeah. So Putin price hike on missiles, you know. Some non-American weapons manufacturers are also poised to rake in taxpayers' money from the aid package. The U.S. government will spend $5.2 billion on Israel's Iron Dome, Iron Beam, and David's Sling defense systems.
Great names.
Is that a Bible thing? Oh, yeah, because I like David Goliath. Oh, yeah. I gotcha. Produced by an Israeli company, Rafael Advanced Defense Systems, or RADS, as I've always called it. And the Indo-Pacific bill loosens rules for spending Defense Production Act money on British and Australian companies. The U.S., Britain, and Australia are working together on the AUKUS submarine project. And we await the release of the beautiful AUKUS submarine. I can't wait for that one. Supporters of the aid package have claimed that Ukraine and Israel are fighting so the American troops don't have to. But the bills themselves make it clear how much heavy lifting the U.S. military is already doing in these wars. They include $11.3 billion to support an American military buildup in Europe and $2.4 billion for American military operations in the Middle East.
Mm. Still there.
Let freedom ring. Let me tell you what, man. Freaking democracy, dude. I just love it.
Yeah.
I just love it. It costs money. Freedom isn't free.
No.
You know?
It's at least a buck 05.
It's
you know what the scariest environment imaginable is?
What's that?
When Republicans and Democrats come together.
Mm-hmm. Any bipartisan bill.
Anytime you see a headline terrifying. That says Republicans and Democrats came together.
It's not good.
It's not good.
It's never good.
You just know. By default, that's not good.
Mm-mm. Let's see. We'll move on to, we talked about that. How about some comments from people regarding this matter? Because we're saying a lot of pro-Putin things right now. And so I just want to make sure that we clear that up. This person, Julia Krill, Ukraine flag in her bio. If you're against military aid for Ukraine, you are, number one, pro-Putin. Number two, pro-Russian government. Number three, pro-Russian invasion of Ukraine. Number four, pro-Russian genocide of Ukrainians. Number five, pro-terrorism. And number six, anti-democracy. It's really as simple as that.
Simple.
It is or it isn't.
Yeah. If you're not with me, you're against me.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You can't have any nuanced conversations whatsoever.
The complete lack of nuance is starting to get to me. But, you know, I had a little back and forth with our good friend, Josh Heckel, over the weekend.
Yeah.
So had a little back and forth because...
Well, he's pro-military aid for Ukraine, so obviously...
Yeah, he's not pro... Not really. He's just pro-democracy, and he's anti-Putin. Mm. You know, he doesn't support Putin's invasion of Ukraine like you do, and so you don't possibly understand where he's coming from on this thing because you're biased, of course. These things are all ridiculous talking points. You could be against military aid for Ukraine for many reasons other than being pro-Putin. You could be against it because you're against taxation and against the government forcing you to borrow money and pay back with interest or inflation or what it did. You just think that that's immoral and that we shouldn't be doing these kinds of things. And that doing this could lead to World War III, nuclear war, whatever. You could have those kind of fears as well.
The live group brings up a good point. If you're pro military aid for Ukraine, then obviously you're pro Nazi.
You're pro Nazi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nazi.
Well, you're supporting Russia, you commie.
Mm.
Have you gotten this fight? Is there a betting system for this? Can we do that?
Probably. I bet a book has it.
I bet someone's got it.
Find a book.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. This person for Congress in Texas is responding to Randy Weber, who is in Congress in Texas. Randy Weber said, Democrats are waving Ukraine flag on the House floor. They are the America Last Party. Sorry, I had a fight in the middle of your America Last Party. This person says, you realize that if Ukraine fails, America will be next. I didn't realize Ukraine was a last line of defense between Putin destroying America. Did you realize that?
Well, we're right next to Ukraine.
Just got to be right there. So if Ukraine goes down, the tanks, they're going to roll right across the Rio Grande right after that. Because that's just how it works, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's a ridiculous thing to say. Mike Johnson also has dumb things to say about, this is from Israel. We'll skip over that because it's about Israel. Let's keep talking about Ukraine. Josh Heckel. I've gotten his name wrong in the past. I just want to make sure that I... Heckel. Is how you say it. Doesn't make any sense because it starts with EA. Okay.
Costco posted a map for us.
I saw that's the one I was just looking for. Yeah. I was scrolling down trying to find that. Yeah, it's got a map of the U.S. and then Mexico is actually labeled Ukraine. And then Russia's down there with a bunch of countries that we don't know the names of. And so that's what it looks like. Once Russia moves through Ukraine, the U.S. is next.
You don't know Panama or Guatemala?
I'm not going to get anything wrong.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Josh says, to be anti-defense is to be pro-war.
Again, here's a, like, when you define a conversation where there can't be any nuance, like, you might as well just not even have the conversation.
No, it's point. It's a binary. Yeah. It's either or.
Yeah.
And what you're...
It's like
you're doing that thing where you say, well, like, reasonable people would agree that, well, now you just said anyone who disagrees with you is unreasonable
right.
Right. Like, you're setting up the conversation like that. And then you knock down the pins after you set the basis of reality yourself.
Like, if I were to say in the abortion argument, like, to be pro-choice is to be anti-life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, because I'm sure if you look at that person's actions, they're probably pro-life.
Most of the time.
Yeah. Like, they at least like their own life and their family's life, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they probably are pro-life. They just, there's a nuanced conversation there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they hate babies.
Yeah.
That's possible. But I can't just label them as that.
Mm-hmm.
Because then there's no conversation to be had.
Or, like, if you protest against innocent people dying in Gaza, that means that you're pro-Hamas. You know, Ben Shapiro does that a lot. Like, these pro, we just saw a bunch of pro Hamas protesters out there. Now, I saw plenty of videos. A lot of these people are actually pro Hamas. Like, they're chanting, like, long live Hamas and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty pro Hamas.
Yeah.
But you could just be against what you consider to be a genocide or just innocent women and children getting killed. But when you make things binary, there's no conversation after that. There's no talking.
Not that we know what a woman is, but
no,
we're against whatever they are being killed.
Josh continues. He said, a world where invaders can waltz into a country and annex it with no repercussions will lead to more war, more death, and more violence. Now, he's not wrong about this, but what he's assuming is that if you're against taking my money by force and giving it to some other random person in select country right now that we're going to give it to, if you're against that, then what you've said is that countries just have the right to waltz into other countries and annex them and take their land and do all that, and that you're actually against them being able to defend themselves. There is a difference in me saying, you shouldn't be able to come to my house, take my stuff, whether it be money or other things that I exchange money for, it's all the same thing, my belongings, you're going to take my belongings and you're going to ship it to someone else. I can be against that, but still think that countries have a right to defend themselves,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Not according to Josh, apparently. Okay. Because he set up this binary system. MAGA. So this, since these things are true in this extremely simplistic and immature way of discussing the situation where you live in a world without any nuance or any other facts other than the ones that you deem to be viable. Since those are true, Josh, he says, MAGA is pro-war. Tucker Carlson is pro-war. RFK Jr. is pro-war. So if you're against taking American taxpayers' money and giving it to Northrop Grumman, then you are pro-war.
Yeah.
I worry that you didn't just follow that line of thinking that I just went through, okay?
No, I followed.
If you're against taking my money and giving it to Lockheed Martin, you are pro-war.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, that's
blowing your mind right now, right? You never thought this deep before.
That is a hoop.
So
that is a hoop that you had to...
So I said, war is peace, Josh Eckel. I want to show you a little bit. Now, he clarified some things. Josh and I are cool, okay? Mm-hmm. We talked. He told me that he likes posting inflammatory things because it does well on Twitter. We've had this conversation in private, and I told him I would never tell anyone, okay?
He's
actually in person a pretty rational dude.
Yeah.
You can have pretty nuanced conversations. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, not so much, because that doesn't sell. We talk about that. That doesn't get retweets.
It doesn't.
How are you going to retweet some nuance? Yeah. Come on, no one cares.
No.
Give me some binary.
It takes too long to think about.
He said, if you're getting invaded and brutalized, the only path to peace is war. Capitulation and enslavement to tyrants and bullies is not peace. Well, I agree with that. I never said that Ukraine can't fight against Russia. I don't think they should just lay down.
And listen to Joe Biden, the blood of trees with the tyrants... Of liberty need to be watered.
Of the blood.
Mm-hmm. Of the blood. you know,
from Corn Pop.
So of course we agree with that.
I said, of course Ukraine has the right to defend themselves, and I hope they win, because I don't like what Russia did in Ukraine. I don't. They seem to be the aggressor.
Pro-Nazi then.
I don't like the precedent that they're going to come in.
Are you a Nazi?
Even if you look at it.
Will you denounce Nazis right now on this show?
Listen, there's fine people on every side.
I didn't know.
I bet.
I might have to quit. I didn't know I was doing a show with a Nazi. You're pro-Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
Will you denounce?
Well, I denounce Nazis. I believe I believe they should be condemned.
No, I want you to right now.
I just did.
No, denounce them.
I denounce
completely.
I declare them to be denounced. They have been denounced.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right. All right. I'll write a story about this later.
Do you have? So then I asked, like,
white
of course,
supremacists.
Of course, they have the right to defend themselves. Do you have the right to send men to my house with guns, confiscate my belongings, and send them to other men in Ukraine? Because that's the question. That's why a lot of people are upset. It's not because they want Russia to win or they want Ukraine to win. Honestly, I don't really care which one happens, but I don't like Russia. I don't
honestly
think they're a good country.
It's that they can't really afford their groceries. And yet they see these billions of dollars going to other countries and they're like, what is going on?
Who is?
The people. That's what they're upset about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they can't afford their groceries.
He said, you're no more coerced. Now, this is an argument I've heard a lot. I've heard it from people like Josh Eckel and Ben Shapiro. You are no more coerced by the U.S. allocating around 5% of the defense budget to help our allies. It's not of the defense budget. That's new money that's not included in the defense budget, but whatever. Or they would just send it because it's already in the defense budget. Right. They've already signed off on that money. We wouldn't need a new bill, but whatever. Of the defense budget to help our allies than you are by the U.S. allocating a percent of their infrastructure budget to build a new segment of the highway. If the argument centers around spending, there are trillions spent via bigger programs that should be included in the conversation. The fact that we're singling out this issue over much larger issues shows the conversation is not about government waste, it's about geopolitical priorities.
But there's still an underlying principle. That's the problem.
And
I'll speak for Nate on this because I can, we are against all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Principled.
Yeah.
Like, I'm against the government spending money on a new highway, too.
That, too.
Yeah.
Because as a libertarian, I hate roads.
Yeah.
You know?
My roads.
Kill the roads. So, the other problem that the principle he just laid out is when it's $95 billion, well, that's hardly anything compared to how much the government spends. And so, why would you single out this issue? There's trillions of other issues that you should single out. So why are you singling out the $95 billion issue? Oh, well, it must be because you hate, well, you're mad about this new food stamp program. Well, that's probably not because you're mad about spending. That's because you're racist.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So what he just laid out was the principle that everyone uses to steal from you $100 billion at a time. Because it's a small percentage of the amount of money that the U.S. government spends, and therefore inconsequential when you talk about it in relation to the $6.5 trillion that we're going to spend this year. Therefore, why get mad about this thing, those other big programs? And when the next thing comes up, why get mad about this thing? We spend tons of other money. You keep saying that. $100 billion at a time, you keep saying that. And that's what Josh just said we need to do. He said that.
And not only that, but then they're able to slap a label on you.
Mm-hmm.
As if you're pro-Putin.
Like I said, they slap these labels on all the time, whether it be for welfare spending or healthcare spending or whatever it is. You hate old people, you hate poor people,
you hate kids,
black people, you hate kids,
single mothers,
whatever it is. And you don't really care about this. You don't care about this $100 billion because we spend $6.5 trillion other dollars. You just hate X. You're this person right here. And I'm going to use that to smear you. Because I care about this thing getting done, is what you're saying. All right. I said, now I felt slightly personally attacked because he told me that I'm singling out an issue over much bigger issues and that that's about my geopolitical priorities, mm-hmm. maybe alluding to the fact that I was pro-Russia, like he said I was pro-Russia by being against the spending. He didn't say it about me personally, but he said it about everyone who's against the spending, so I'm included mm-hmm. in that group,
yeah,
which is the problem when you talk about groups of people.
You're a Putin price plant.
Yeah.
PPP.
I said he was well aware that I'm equally against any other part of the government spending that have dedicated 99% of our 1,220 episodes to such things. On the other hand, I've rarely seen Josh celebrate government spending $100 billion on something, so maybe he's the one that's biased. Because mm-hmm. I've never seen him celebrate a new $100 billion package from the U.S. government before. Yeah. This is actually the first time that I've seen it, which is weird. And then he clarified and said, this is not about you personally. And that's where we switch back into, hey, man, we're cool. So, because we've already met personally a couple times and had an interview and talked stuff out. And
you're at war with Josh.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a war.
Binary speaking and thinking is a really bad way to have political conversations. But unfortunately, it's the most effective way to go viral on social media.
It gets people riled up.
Yeah.
It gets the people going. It's provocative.
It gets you riled up like it got me riled up seeing that post. I'm like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
And that's why the engagement is so much better, because you just called a bunch of people Nazis or anti. And so now you've just, you know, you're talking bad about half the population or whatever, like 60% of the population that doesn't support this funding anymore. And that's why it gets better engagement. So it's not a good way to have political conversations, though. It really isn't. You don't solve any problems.
And I feel like used to when people would say things that are ridiculous, we would just ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
But now we feel the need you have the right playing the same game now, right? So they started getting canceled. Now they want to cancel other people.
Well, like if you talk bad about Israel.
Yeah.
I mean, you could talk bad about Israel. You could say you don't even like Zionism. You could say you think that Israel getting that land in 48 that they got the land. You could be, but that makes you an anti-Semite. That means that college campuses should censor your speech. They literally pulled people up and said that they needed to censor people talking bad about Israel. And sometimes when you're like actually blocking a person from walking around because they're Jewish, like that's anti-Semitism. When you're talking about how you disagree with Zionism and war policy and stuff like that, it's not anti-Semitism. It could be anti-Semitism at the basis of your disagreement, I guess, but not always.
Right.
Not always the case.
Right.
But yeah, the right loves to do this too.
And then it becomes a politically ideological political battle.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't, nuance gets pushed to the wayside and you can't have an intelligent conversation.
We got a lot more coming right up on Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network with Nate and Charlie.
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster. Police state.
It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Free Talk Live. Well, what's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. And, of course, Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees of less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for the sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org. And of course, I got to remind you guys, Charlie and I, we've been doing these kind of shows for a long time now, not just for Free Talk Live and Liberty at Night, but also our daily podcast, which has 1,221 episodes called Good Morning Liberty. So you got to make sure you go to BernieLies.com. That'll bring up the links to all the stuff we have. We record with a live group on our private Discord channel every day, which you can get to by going to joingml.com. With Good Morning Liberty, we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of meaning every single day of the week when we want to. Smash follow, subscribe, like, share, repost, all of the things you can possibly do. Hit quote.
I like repost. The three, the smash, follow, subscribe.
Smash, follow, subscribe.
It's almost like the kiss, marry, you know?
Yeah.
Which one would you, yeah.
Kill one.
Kill,
yeah, that
marry,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, we got a few things to talk
smash,
about.
Smash, follow, subscribe.
A few things to talk about today. First off, an update on the situation we talked about yesterday. It looks like 133 protesters were arrested at NYU. Mm. Last night, and then this says from the Washington Post, it says Calif students form a barricade. I'm assuming that stands for California. Mm. So California students are forming the barricade. There's really the only reason I wanted to talk about this. We can play the video here from, I guess, people getting arrested. Let's see what that sounded like.
Is that
fun.
The chair that Morgan Wallen threw?
That's the same chair.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Shame on you!
Shame on you.
Shame on you.
Yeah.
And then people start chanting, which means their IQs just dropped by 40 points. And
shame on you. Do they watch too many Game of Thrones episodes?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't watched any, so I don't even get the reference personally.
They're not shaming themselves for the coup sit-in that they're doing.
No.
Shame on the officers.
They've got a right. This, Charlie, is protected by the First Amendment because they're speaking. And so that means they can do whatever they want.
As long as you're talking.
As long as you are protesting or exercising some form of speech, even political speech, it means that there are no other rules.
Yeah.
At all.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I've heard from a few people, like this guy, Samalama Dabinahmed. He says, breaking militarized NYPD arresting pro-Palestine NYU protesters and walking them to police buses. America is becoming a police state in real time. Zionism has forced them to throw away the First Amendment.
Now look, I'm no fan of,
the police state.
Yeah, over-policing or militarization of the police. Certainly no fan of them arresting people for things that they're not doing, or things that don't
violate the rights of other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't really agree with getting pulled over for not using your turn signal, although I think you should use one.
You should.
It's annoying when you don't, but to get pulled over.
Victimless crime, you know.
Exactly. But for something like this, where these
people are. So is drunk driving.
Where these people are clearly violating property rights.
Yeah.
They're violating the free movement of other people. Like, absolutely arrest them.
They're blocking other students.
Remove them.
Like there are people paying tens of thousands of dollars to go to these schools and they're blocking other students from being able to go to class and go about their daily lives. It's not the entire school that's involved in these protests, but they're almost shutting down the schools when they're doing this. And we did see videos of people actually blocking people from going through certain areas. Like this is not free speech. That is not your right to protest. You don't have a right to do that. You don't have a right to remove the liberties of other people. You can stand there with a sign and protest all you want, but it doesn't mean you can step in front of someone and block them from walking from place to place or anything like that. And honestly, NYU, you know, we said Columbia is a private university. I don't know about NYU either, whether or not they're a private university, but these places can set their own rules about what people can do on their grounds, especially if they're a private university like Columbia. If they want to say that you can't go out there and protest, then they should be able to. It's their property. So, of course, they can set the rules about what people are going to do on their property. Now, you're paying to be there, but you're also paying to go to school. At the same time, I saw Columbia is going to do a hybrid class schedule, like a lot of remote learning and stuff for the remainder of the semester.
For the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Which because, is a couple weeks.
I mean, this is, yeah, it's, oh yeah, I didn't realize it's like April. So
well, I guess like that's the end of April.
Maybe a month.
So not even the first week of May. It's like all of your finals are done.
Might as well. So I said yesterday, I'm totally fine. And I tweeted last night, totally fine watching these places tear themselves apart. I don't think many of these institutions are a net benefit for society at all. And if the students who are going there are going to tear it apart and the schools are going to allow them, they're reaping what they've sown. These are the these are the people that they've created.
Yeah,
they've created this.
I love what Jordan Peterson says about it because he talks about how we teach these 18-year-olds that they can change the world.
Yeah.
And he laughs at it. Like, what are you going to do? You know? And he's like, and he talks about fixing a military helicopter. You know? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? You're like a chimp with a wrench. But that's not a bad thing. What he's telling you is that you've got a lot to learn. Like, he says, you know, you got 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Put your life together. You don't know everything right now. Can't save the world currently. But what you can do is improve yourself. And you don't improve yourself by joining, the way he says it, you don't by joining a damn mob.
Yeah.
You know, that's not how you work on yourself, improve yourself to be a net benefit to society. This clearly is not.
So this is a picture of free speech right here.
But he's right. We teach these 18, 19, 20-year-olds that they could change the world. And you can change the world eventually, but not when you're 18, 19, 20. You don't know enough yet.
No.
I don't know enough yet.
We're learning as we go.
Yes.
Right here. We are the most humble podcasters that you'll ever find.
But see, that's the difference, though, is humbleness rather than ego. Now, the only problem with us is that we tend to be right almost all of the time.
That's it.
So as we're learning,
makes being humble that much harder.
Yes. Yeah. So we really have to work at it.
Yeah, but we are still the best.
Yeah. So exactly.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know? Okay. That's all. That's just a little update on that
Costco's
situation.
Costco's right. Hang on a second. From the live group, Costco's right. Can we send them to fight for Hamas? That's the solution. All these people that are protesting, we'll give them some rifles and a plane ticket straight to, I don't know, Kyiv or whatever.
Sorry.
That's
right in the middle of Gaza.
That's the wrong war. Yeah. Wrong
it's
war.
Capital, actually.
Yeah. We'll send them. We'll send them to Israel.
Yeah.
We'll just drop them in there. That way they straight fly in. Over the, you know, just like they did on the parachute. Like,
here's your aid. And you drop people in that are ready to fight, you know? Okay. Yeah. That's
see
the
how
update
long
on
they
that.
Last.
This is probably going to keep.
See how long they chant shame on you.
maybe the fact that the semesters are about to end is going to help calm this down, I guess, because I really hadn't thought about that much. But this is not going to stop because 133 people got arrested last night either. Like, these kids are exercising their religion right now. They're exercising their faith at the moment, and they're not just going to stop. And in fact, it's probably going to continue to get worse until the end of the school year. And then, I don't know, summer classes, whatever. And people have summer off. Are we going to have another summer of love before the election? It's just going to be like a pre-election ceremony that we do every 4 years. We just have protests and barricades and Chaz Chops and all that kind of stuff.
Chaz Chops.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay, let's shift.
The libertarian dream.
Let's shift violently to another topic that we didn't get to yesterday, but it's got to be mentioned. Sheetz, which is a convenience store chain. Is it like a gas station too, or is it just a says convenience store chain?
You've never been to a Sheetz?
I mean, I'm sure.
What kind of tours were you on?
I'm sure I have at some point in time, but I was drunk. So what do you expect me to do? All Sheetz. I saw was that there was a gas station and I needed to pull in there so we could get gas. Other than that, I was too drunk to realize what the name of the place was.
Sheetz is pretty good. They got good food.
That was me describing how I was drunk driving a vehicle into a gas station.
I was going to blow by that
because
I didn't want you to get in trouble. That's all. It's all hearsay, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from you.
No, that's a joke. That was satirical.
Yeah, okay. Clearly.
Whoever wants to take that seriously. Convenience store chain with hundreds of outlets in six states hit with discrimination lawsuit.
It's one of the best. I wouldn't say it's the greatest, but it's one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on tour, for sure.
And, well, and, of course you would like this place because they discriminate against people.
If you're on tour and or you travel around a lot, you know that Sheetz has some of the best food. You go up and order on a screen, typically. You get like, you can order hamburger, pizza, sandwich.
Hamburger, pizza.
All of it.
Okay.
You know, and then they make your food right there. It's delicious.
Huh. Well, Charlie knows his Sheetz.
Yeah.
Look at this headline. It's pretty funny. Pretty funny description of this. Sheetz discriminated against Black, Native American, and multiracial job seekers by weeding out applicants who the company deemed to have failed a criminal background check, according to U.S. officials. Of course, when you conduct background checks, you are automatically discriminated against people who aren't white.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that this works. It's a ridiculous premise on its... just first off, let's talk about the principle behind this. We're supposed to have a free market. Now, we don't have a free market, but this is a company. They invest and they open stores and they sell goods to people. They hire people to come in there. They give them jobs, pay them. And one of their criteria for people who are going to be working around all of these goods and around a bunch of people is that they don't want them to have a criminal background. They don't want felons to come and work there.
Which, by the way, is almost everywhere.
Like, that's a lot of places, but apparently this is going to be illegal according to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
The live group is still having a debate about Wawa versus Sheetz. So
I haven't been to Wawa, I don't think, either. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Is that a Northeast thing, possibly?
I don't know. You probably spend all your time at the Come and Go.
The Sheetz convenience store chain has been hit with a lawsuit by federal officials who allege the company discriminated against minority job applicants. Sheetz, which operates more than 700 stores in six states, discriminated against Black, Native American, and multiracial job seekers by automatically weeding out applicants whom the company deemed to have failed a criminal background check, according to U.S. officials.
And every time you read something like this, all I hear in my head is see a phone being grabbed and held in front of my face and saying, "Stop breaking the law, asshole."
Thanks for giving me something to edit out. That's great.
Oh, wait. I can't say that?
No, no, because you said the second word.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
I should have just said, Sheetz. Stop breaking.
Oh, Sheetz.
Stop breaking the law, ass. And that's fine.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed a suit in Baltimore against Altoona, Pennsylvania-based Sheetz, and two subsidiary companies alleging the chain's longstanding hiring practices have disproportionate impact on minority applicants and thus run afoul of federal civil rights laws.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be clear, they're not actually alleging that Sheetz is intentionally discriminating against people. They're not alleging that they have discriminatory hiring practices where they say like, oh, it's a Black person, I want to hire them. That's a discriminatory hiring practice. They're not alleging that. They're alleging that one of their criteria for their employees has a disproportionate impact on Black, Native American, and whoever else, people who aren't white.
Yeah.
And as long as, according to them, according to this one government agency here, according to them, as long as you can prove that this rule resulted in a disproportionate impact on minorities, then this is against the law for them to do it.
Yeah. This is the so this is why we talk about these things, because we said, I don't know, probably 5 years ago that you would start to see these types of things happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem with agencies like the Equal Opportunity Employment, whatever BS agency it is. This is the problem when you try to seek equality or whatever. They will use any metrics or means necessary, as Nate pointed out, to try and come after you.
Mm-hmm.
And the facts of the case are that it just so happens that the majority of folks who have a criminal background check that are applying to Sheetz happen to be of a minority race.
Yeah. That's
so that's
it.
That's their fault.
What if you have standards that say, I mean, not for sheets, but what if there's a different job and you're like, well, you should have, you need to have gotten good test scores in college. Well, first off, college. What if you require a college degree? But second, what if you just, maybe someone doesn't go to college, but you're like, well, let me look at your ACT scores instead, something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, what if that has a disproportionate impact?
Yeah.
And you can't weed people out by what their test scores are, you know? Yeah. Well, that's discriminatory.
Yeah. I think
here's how they're justifying it. So there is some backing for this, just so you know. Federal law mandates that employment practices causing a disparate impact because of race or other protected classifications must be shown by the employer to be necessary to ensure the safe and efficient performance of the particular jobs at issue. How about go screw yourself? These are our jobs that we are offering the people, and we're going to set whatever standards we want for people who are coming to work. But whatever, you don't have that right in America. They say even when such necessity is proven, the practice remains unlawful if there is an alternative practice available that is comparatively collective in achieving the employer's goals but causes less discriminatory effect. So that's even if they do prove that there's a need to ensure safe and efficient performance, if there is another way of doing this that other people do it, ways that other people do it, then you have to go with that way instead of this one. That's the rule. So let's see. The EEOC is seeking to force Sheets to offer jobs to applicants who were unlawfully denied employment and to provide back pay, retroactive seniority, and other benefits. That's where we've just gone totally off the rails here. Totally off the rails.
No, we already went off the rails.
Back pay.
This is the complete train wreck. Yeah.
This is a derailment of epic proportions. Yeah. What? So back pay.
I hope Sheets closes down.
I don't hope Sheets closes down.
I hope they close every mother truck and gas station in the United States.
You see, I don't want to do that because
not just Sheets, all of them.
What's going to pop up in their stead? It's going to be an employer.
No, we'll all start walking.
No, someone who's going to comply with the government is going to take over all of their business.
No,
it's going to be the answer.
All the business owners should get together and just conspire to just quit at the same time. Let them have it.
Imagine saying they should provide back pay. And if you were to even make an argument for that, you have to show that this person wasn't hired and then they couldn't find a job anywhere else either. Now, apparently, since Sheets is getting sued for this and not the other gas station down the street, they're the only one that requires that you get criminal background checks, meaning if the person couldn't get a job at Sheets, they could go get a job at your local Wawa or your local Come and Go. Whatever it is.
Now, why is Sheets being sued instead of the local gas stations?
I don't know, because they're bigger.
Yeah, they have over 700 stores and they have the money to pay. Mm-hmm. That's why. Look at this. This is so ridiculous. The agency found that black job applicants were deemed to have failed the company's criminal history screening and were denied employment at a rate of 14.5%. Multiracial job seekers were turned away at 13.5% of the time, and Native Americans at a rate of 13%. By contrast, fewer than 8% of white applicants, probably like 7.99%, were refused. So what you're saying is they still refuse white applicants who don't pass the criminal background check.
They
do.
They have the same rules regardless of what your color is for your skin. It's just a standard for hiring practices that they have. And it just so happens.
Now, is this a weighted average? Because let's say you have 100 white applicants, mm-hmm. and 8 of them failed the criminal background check.
Yeah.
Okay, but you have 5 black applicants, and one of them failed. Mm-hmm. There's your percentages.
Yeah.
So are they taking that into account?
I'm not sure. I'm going to have to go look at the actual demographic makeup of their employees. What would be really funny to see is if like over half the people that work for them are black.
Yeah.
Because that's not discussed in this. I have no clue what those numbers actually are, but that would be kind of funny to see. I'm sure we can probably find that information. This is ridiculous. The back pay thing is ridiculous. What if the person left there, went and got a job somewhere else, and they've been earning money this entire time? And now Sheetz has to offer them a job and offer them back pay, even though they went to the next gas station down the street and were earning money this whole time. It didn't harm them financially whatsoever. And you got to give them seniority. What is seniority? Seniority means that you've been there longer than other people, and so you know more than other people that come there. That's what seniority is.
Yeah.
But in the government's view of seniority, see, they think in like union government terms for seniority, meaning just years of service at a place, and it means nothing whatsoever except for years of service at a place.
Yeah.
Seniority at a job at a private company means that you're more knowledgeable about the inner workings of this business than the new people are. So you're going to come in as a new person, and what, they got to offer you a manager position because you've been there for 3 years, technically, according to the government? We're just going to hire this person as a manager. They don't know what the heck they're doing, but got to give them seniority, you know, this and all the other benefits.
Absurd. This is so absurd.
We, I tell you what, Biden has been one of the most anti-free market presidents that I've seen in quite a long time. And they're all pretty anti-free market. Trump was way better on the free market than Biden is. Mm-hmm. You got to give him that. And since we think capitalism is very important and leads to better lives for everyone, it's the only moral system that there is, in fact, and it happens to save a lot of people's lives, and economics is the most important thing because more people die from poverty than from war, I tend to favor whichever president's going to be better on economics.
So you're telling me, this is basically what you're telling me.
Yeah.
The only train that can fix this train wreck is the Trump train. Are you announcing your tickets as a conductor of the Trump train?
No, wow. I'm not officially.
This would happen.
Not officially announcing that. No,
you are a narcissist lover.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. BitRefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
What's up, everyone? It's Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you so much for being here. Remember to go check out our daily podcast called Good Morning Liberty, BernieLies.com. I know it looks like we're going to talk about Google firing 28 employees. This is actually a conversation about property rights that I thought was pretty cool. Because we had these employees that staged a sit-in at their own company, at their own place of work.
Mm, they're protesting against their own employment.
Protested their own employer, and Google fired 28 of them. So in this story from The Guardian, Google said Thursday it terminated 28 employees after some staff participated in protests against the company's cloud contract with the Israeli government. The Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google, unit said a small number of protesting employees entered and disrupted work at a few unspecified office locations, quote, physically impeding other employees' work and preventing them from accessing our facilities is a clear violation of our policies and completely unacceptable behavior, the company said in a statement. Google said it concluded individual investigations resulting in the termination of 28 employees and would continue to investigate and take action as needed.
Mm.
So I wanted to pair this with something that happened while you were gone, which was some pretty big anti-Israel / anti-genocide / pro-Palestinian protests that happened on April 15th tax day. They were protesting actually on tax day because of our tax money going to fund what's going on in Israel right now. So first off, that made me wonder, it's kind of sad. It made me think to myself, we never have any protests on tax day. It's freaking tax day.
Right.
You don't have libertarians organizing protests on tax day. Okay. So that's my first thing. Yeah. You get the pro-Palestinian / anti-Israeli protesters together, a bunch of people out there. In the meantime, 300 million Americans are getting money stolen from them against their will, and we don't have any tax day protests. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of sad.
Maybe there are some. We just don't get as much media coverage.
I guess so. That could be the thing. So they have these protests. Here's what it looked like. People sitting down, they weren't wearing masks. I don't know if that's because they're afraid of COVID or because they don't want to be identified.
Google, you can't hide. Oh, Google,
chilling
you
in here.
Hide.
No, Google, you can't hide.
I don't know about you, but when I hear crowds chanting things, it is one of the most annoying things in the world to me. Mm. They're so annoying. Cops come in to...
What I spoke about earlier.
Arrest people. I think they ask at one point, like, are you refusing to leave? Okay. Cops come in. Now people are getting arrested. All right. So these protests happen, and they shut down the Golden Gate Bridge. I believe O'Hare Airport was shut down as well. Tom Cotton goes on the news talking about how these people need to be dealt with. People need to take matters into their own hands. You see the cops around these protesters who are, for instance, blocking the Golden Gate Bridge. And you see the cops basically protecting them, and you see all the traffic backed up, and then the same thing happens around O'Hare Airport and all that. And the really weird thing is that in these instances, you see cops protecting the protesters and almost protecting their right to protest and to block traffic and to, you know, stop people from going to work and stuff like that. So my interesting little thought I had on this was that when it happens inside of a private company's headquarters or offices, they say that you're stopping people from conducting their work, you're impeding their work, and they have cops come in and they arrest the people because they're trespassing and they're violating their policies. When it happens on the street and you're blocking everyone's right to go to work and everyone's right to go do anything, the cops show up and protect them and make sure that they're safe and just stand there while they're protesting.
Yeah. I guess there's more of a clear definition of private property rights when it's happening on private property.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to public use of land, then you kind of have competing rights. But again, as we say here, your rights end where another's begins. You're free to protest, but if you're blocking someone's right to freely travel, then the protest is now null and void.
It's not that I like Google very much, because we know they're one of those tyrannical companies.
You know what they care more about than their, you know, their left-wing leanings? Money.
Money, yeah.
Yeah.
Their company moving efficiently and getting their work done.
Yeah.
And so that's an important thing for them, for sure. And it's just one of those great things where I love seeing it, where you have private property and these people come in, and of course the cops come in and arrest them. When they line up on the streets, the cops come out there and protect them. And to me, that's an argument in favor of privatizing the roads.
There we
there
go.
You go. Yeah. That's the problem with public property.
Amen.
There's your fix for this whole protesting thing. In other news, something going on right now. Biden, I believe yesterday, called for tripling tariffs on Chinese metals, like steel, you know, aluminum, stuff like that. So Joseph Robinette Biden called for tripling tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum Wednesday when he spoke to union members in Battleground, Pennsylvania. So when you wonder how this is happening, just remember, it's always the...
Unions.
They are the downfall of America. Yes, that is
bridge.
Correct, Charlie. Mm-hmm. Everything comes down to the unions. That's what in remarks at the headquarters of the United Steelworkers, Biden said that China was cheating in its steel trade practices and that the Office of U.S. Trade... Now, get how they're stealing. On steel. They're subsidizing their steel industry. Okay? Now, I get it. The idea is, here's the idea. They're going to subsidize their steel industry and make it so cheap that we have to buy steel from them because it's so much cheaper. That's going to put American steel workers out of business. That's going to kill our ability to create steel here in the U.S. And then they'll go out of business, and then China's going to they're cornering the market. They're a monopoly.
Yeah.
Actually, this is unfair practices that they're doing. I think the word cheating is kind of funny when we also subsidize tons of industries here in the U.S. You know,
tons.
Like a lot,
all of them. So
that's a little weird. Biden's in the middle of a 3-day swing through the state, focusing on economic issues, while his opponent, former President Donald Trump, faces jury selection in New York and his trial on charges that he falsified business records to cover up an alleged affair with an adult film star.
Well, so Biden's on the campaign trail. His opponent, his political opponent,
is in court.
Is in court.
Because he has to be. Because, well, we don't have to get into the whole court thing, but what, it's a great election technique, you know. You just get the Justice Department, you know, to go after Trump for all kinds of stuff and keep him in court throughout the entire
year. I don't
know
why other countries haven't thought of this.
I know.
You know?
Jailing your political opponents. Yeah.
Tying them up in court?
That's crazy. The Biden administration says China's overproducing goods to export to the U.S., driving down prices and hurting the American economy because higher quality U.S. products must compete with the artificially low-priced alternatives. For too long, they've been pouring state money into Chinese steel companies, pushing them to make so much steel, as much as possible, subsidized by the Chinese government, Biden said Wednesday. They're not competing. They're cheating. They are cheating. And we've seen the damage here in America. Why do you think companies would rather buy from China instead of buying from America? I mean, maybe they're just subsidizing and it's making the price really low, right? And then also U.S. steel, probably really expensive. Do you think it's more expensive than it would need to be?
Yes. Because of unions.
Because of unions.
Yes.
Yeah. And probably government regulations and stuff like that too. But mainly unions.
Mainly unions.
We know that. It's mostly their fault. The average tariff on steel and aluminum from China is 7.5%. Asked by NBC News whether he was concerned the new steel tariffs would hurt his relationship with Xi Jinping, Biden said he wasn't. He also said that these actions will not increase inflation, but they will protect American jobs and the steel industry. I have to question that. I know you're not supposed to question authority, stuff like that. But if the entire thing here is that China's steel is cheaper, leave out any reason, maybe they're manipulating the market, subsidizing, whatever. Chinese steel is cheaper. American steel is more expensive. And so we're going to put tariffs on the Chinese steel to make it more expensive. And either consumers or producers who are consumers of these goods will buy the more expensive now Chinese steel with the tariffs on it, or they'll buy from American steel,
which is still expensive.
Which is still expensive. Maybe
raising
even more
the prices
expensive
for
producers, which then will raise prices for consumers because all of the input prices to all of the things went up. And you get one sentence in this NBC News article from a quote from a guy saying, this is a senior administration official saying, this is not going to increase inflation.
Even though the price is going to go up.
Literally, like the point of this, the outcome, if you do this perfectly, the outcome is things will be more expensive. That's literally the outcome. One argues that.
Yeah.
It's actually they're not going to fight me on that. I was like, so stuff's going to be more expensive? They go, yeah.
It's not like you're going to put a tariff on Chinese steel and then all of a sudden U.S. steel becomes cheaper.
No. It's the same price. In fact, it doesn't have to compete as hard anymore. It's actually got a reason to get even more expensive and calling for even more tariffs on Chinese steel. The only outcome is that things get more expensive.
But every building.
But that's not every building, every car. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we've already got plenty of inflation on our Coke cans.
How are people supposed to get diabetes now?
I don't know.
You know?
That's going to make it more difficult.
They're going to be able to afford their diabetes.
How are you supposed to get heavy metal poisoning?
I don't know.
No.
How are you supposed to make swords?
This literally will increase inflation. It's okay.
Let's think about this, though. This will probably increase the price of guns. Which will reduce the purchase of guns, reduce guns in America. This is how we solve gun violence.
There you go. That's what it is. It's a gun policy. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. That tracks for sure. In other news, by the way, Biden is probably doing this because tariffs are one of Trump's main talking points. And so Biden is coming now.
So the fight's going to be in these swing states. So in these swing states, like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, they're.
Remember, Trump wants to win the union votes too.
Yes, because they want the blue collar votes. That's what they want. So that's kind of what turned the election in 2016 and what turned the election back in 2020, essentially. And so to go after these swing states, they're trying to win that blue collar union work vote. Mm-hmm.
And Trump's trying to do that, and Biden sees that, and he's like, oh, well, I'll do tariffs also, and the unions are going to love it, and it's going to help me get more union support, and that's going to help me in the election. It's probably why he's doing this in an election year yet again.
Isn't it crazy, though, that you're like, they can introduce these policies just to try to win re-election, but it has serious effects on your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their whole goal is just to win re-election.
That's it.
But the outcome of these types of things, like, decides whether or not your family can, like, eat or not.
Like, everything.
It's insane.
Everything gets more expensive.
Yes.
An airplane gets more expensive. A train gets more expensive. A Coke can gets more expensive. A car.
Which, for Boeing, they might need to get more expensive.
They probably should.
Yeah.
Probably should do a better job on that stuff. Yeah. It's probably just price gouging has been their biggest thing. Mm-hmm. Profiteering. They're taking too much profits, not caring about quality. Okay, let's move on to the next tab. Up here. Now, this is interesting. Did you know that the Supreme Court effectively abolished the right to mass protests in 3 U.S. states?
No.
I actually disagree with this. Well, it's not really a ruling. They decided not to hear a case, which was decided in the Fifth Circuit, and they decided not to hear it, which means it basically sticks with what the Fifth Circuit
stands.
Yes.
Well, their opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the case on this is McKesson versus Doe. So it leaves in place a lower court decision that effectively eliminated the right to organize a mass protest in these states of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. It does not eliminate the right to organize a mass protest, but it does do this. Under that lower court decision, a protest organizer faces potentially ruinous financial consequences if a single attendee at a mass protest commits an illegal act.
Mm.
So if you organize the protest, then someone at your protest destroys property or does whatever, you're liable for it. That's dumb.
That's real dumb.
It should be the individual who did the thing.
Mm.
Okay. And Vox has this big long piece about how terrible this whole thing is. Let me get down. Let's see. McKesson helped to organize the Baton Rouge protest following the fatal police shooting of Alton Sterling. During that protest, an unknown individual threw a rock or similar object at a police car. The plaintiff in the McKesson case, who was identified as Officer John Doe. Sadly, the officer was struck in the face and, according to one court, suffered injuries to his teeth, jaw, brain, and head.
Mm.
Lord, must have been a big rock. Let's see. Everyone agrees that this rock was not thrown by McKesson. And the Supreme Court held in NAACP versus Claiborne, the protest leaders cannot be held liable for the violent actions of a protest participant, absent unusual circumstances that are not present in the McKesson case, such as if McKesson had authorized, directed, or ratified the decision to throw the rock.
Trump authorized
exactly
the Jan 6 protesters.
That's where this is leading.
Yes.
Right now. Thank you.
Yeah.
So Vox has this whole piece about how the person who organized the protest should never be held liable for what someone at the protest does, and that effectively bans mass protests. And then we have this flip side
which
idea.
Which it doesn't, because you can still have mass protests.
Yeah, you can still have it, but are you going to organize one if you know that if one of your people gets crazy and does something that you're going to be held liable for that?
Just have them sign a waiver.
Yeah, I guess. Or just don't. Or I mean, how can they prove who organized the protests? You know, people come together in these groups, and can you really tell who organized this thing? So
it would probably be whoever's in the group that's most organized.
Yeah, is the organizer.
So you go to their home, they have color-coded folders, you know.
Yeah.
You look at their desktop on their computer and everything's in a perfect, neat folder, you know.
That's the organizer.
They don't.
That person.
They probably organized. I mean, if they're that organized, you walk into their house, it looks like they don't live there because everything is so perfectly neat and organized. Then that's probably the person who also would organize a protest like this, a mass one.
So the law that they were.
What if it's mostly peaceful, though?
Mm, I don't know if there's a percentage where they start to take something into account or what it is, but the law that the Fifth Circuit went over in their decision that they made, I believe, is wrong in the eyes of the Constitution, in the eyes of the Founding Fathers, in the eyes of individual rights and individual liberty. You should not be held responsible for something that someone else did. Even when it comes to free speech and incitement, it has to be like right then. Like you tell someone, go do this thing right now. You know, it can't even be like the day before. I don't know what the exact time horizon is. It's not like they charged Trump with incitement. There are laws against that. They didn't charge him with that, but they're still holding him responsible for Jan 6 when all he did was give a speech and riled some people up, I guess. And then some people did some dumb stuff on January 6th. So it seems to go exactly against the argument that they would make for that protest slash riot, but they're arguing in favor of this BLM riot and the way that it turned out, that the person who organized it shouldn't be held responsible for that. I just wonder if they're ever going to wake up and be like, oh, crap, that means Trump shouldn't be held liable for what happened on Jan 6.
No.
I don't know.
Mm-mm.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, no, they're, they're good, honest journalists.
No, he incited it, so that's the difference here.
I gotcha.
You know?
Okay. Well, let's move on to maybe one more topic before we get out of here today. As we said beforehand, we do kind of have a hard stop. We got Dumb Bleep tomorrow. It's going to be a good end of the week. It's going to be fine. Everyone stop complaining.
Everything's so fine.
Jeez, I don't know why so many people are yelling at us right now.
It's a free show for most of you.
Yeah. So Robert Reich posted this out, and I just wanted to talk about how dumb this was real quick. We might not want to spend too much time on it tomorrow. He said, look at this chart. This is what the Trump tax cuts for the rich have done. This is what they want to double down on. It's a scam in plain sight. And he posts this chart. And it says, households with incomes in the top 1% benefit most from the 2017 Trump tax law. Yeah. Okay. And then they show this chart. And it goes through the quintiles. And it gets up there to the top 1%. And what it shows you is how much money you saved by switching to a lower tax amount. And of course, the top 1%, well, they save something like $61,000. And look at the lowest quintile, they only save 70.
Yeah.
I mean, why isn't the lowest quintile saving more than $61,000 on their taxes, Charlie?
Lowest quintile doesn't even make $61,000.
And so this is a really annoying example where you could use...
Line Group says, isn't quintiles a dating app?
You can look at this. You can make a chart that shows the total dollar amount of how much people's taxes changed. And no matter what, the people at the top are going to have a much higher dollar amount than everyone else.
Yeah. What's crazy to me, though, is basically... so. Essentially, like 95% of the taxes get paid by the fourth quintile and up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What amazes me is that the middle, second, and lowest quintile saved any money at all. They weren't even paying taxes.
They barely
paid
taxes.
Yeah. So that's what's most impressive.
So,
but of course, the top 1% is going to save the most because they pay the most.
They pay almost all
the taxes.
So
individuals pay.
Let me see. Let me find. What this at? This is from The Hill. IRS data proves that the Trump tax cuts benefited middle and working class Americans the most. So let me find where they actually start to talk about these numbers. A careful analysis of the IRS tax data, one that includes the effect of tax credits and other reforms of the tax code, shows that filers with an adjusted gross income from here on out, we'll say AGI, from 15 to 50,000 enjoyed an average tax cut of 16% to 26%. In 2018, that's the year after the tax cuts went into effect. Filers who earned 50 to 100K received a tax break of about 15 to 17%. Remember, the lower one was 16 to 26%. This one is 15 to 17%. Those earning 100 to 500K in AGI saw their personal income taxes cut by around 11 to 13%. By comparison, no income group with an AGI of at least 500K received an average tax cut exceeding 9%. And the average tax cut for brackets starting at 1 million was less than 6%. And so for the lower bracket here, 15 to 50K, you saw an average tax cut of 16 to 26%. And for people starting at a million and above, their tax cut was less than 6%. Mm. But the argument can be made that it's the rich people who benefited the most from the tax cuts, because you're using dollars to explain the benefit, while the percentage of income taxes they paid definitely went down more for the lower tax brackets and not the higher tax bracket. It's just straight up lying. It's lying. He knows what it is.
Yes.
He knows this. Before he posted it, he knows that looking at it in dollar form is going to show what he wants it to show and not what the actual truth is, which is that for each one of these tax brackets, the tax average tax rate went down. But for the bottom 50% in this particular graph, that percentage is a lot more than how it went down for the top 1%. He knows this, mm-hmm. which is why he's showing it in dollar form. So maybe that'll be a dumb bleep, or maybe we just covered it right there and we'll have plenty more to talk about tomorrow.
Sounds like a dumb bleep.
It kind of sounded like one, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
It had the cadence of a dumb bleep, you know?
If my ears aren't lying to me, yes.
Let's go, man.
You could easily do that math, by the way.
I mean,
you just look at the numbers and just easily, like if I save 20% on $15,000, well, that's $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
If I saved 5% on $1 million, that's 5% of a million. That'd be $50,000. So
yeah,
20% is a much higher savings.
And it comes down to, sorry, I was trying to pull this up. It comes down to this fact right here, which is that the typical taxpayer, how much they pay in income taxes each year. And so the bottom 50%, the typical taxpayer, the average is $667. For the top 1%, the average per taxpayer is $653,000.
Jesus.
So even though theirs went down less on a percentage basis, the number is clearly more than the people who pay $667. So
yeah.
Gosh. There you go.
That's why math is racist.
I know. All right, coming up, we're going to do some dumb bleep of the week. We got 10 dumb bleeps. That's where the live group throws in submissions. I throw in submissions, and we present each one of these items. The live group gets to vote on the dumbest thing that was said in politics over the last week, and that is coming right up. So it's Dumb Bleep of the Week. That's the day of the week where we go through the dumbest things that have happened in politics, and we will discuss them. The live group, the Fed Haters Club, which you can join by going to joingml.com. They are going to vote on what the dumbest thing was, and then we will officially crown the Dumb Bleep of the Week winner. And then we'll have the big Dumb Bleep of the Year celebration at the end of the year. All right, Dumb Bleep number one, it is Mike Johnson. This first one is going to be Mike Johnson proclaiming that he is a wartime speaker. He regards himself as a wartime speaker of the House. And we'll listen to him talking about that and then something else he said, and that'll be the extent of the warring that we talk about today. Here's Mike Johnson.
Look, we are in unprecedented times, okay? We're in dangerous times, as has been articulated here, around the world, and here at home. We need steady leadership. We need steady hands at the wheel. I regard myself as a wartime speaker. I mean, in a literal sense, we are. I knew that when I took the gavel. I didn't anticipate that this would be an easy path. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich posted a couple days ago on his social media that this is the hardest challenge that's...
All right, that's enough. First off, that's that first video. A wartime speaker, in a literal sense, by the way. Because America's at war... Or because some other countries are at war, in which case, basically all speakers are wartime speakers because there's always someone warring around the world.
He said this is unprecedented.
This has never happened.
This is the most dangerous time we've ever been in.
Therefore, we have to spend roughly $95 billion and that'll take care of it. Problem solved.
Well, on top of the 150 we already spent.
Yeah, all the other stuff. So, and then the $3 billion a year that we already give Israel on top of that. Yep. But yeah, $95 billion even. We'll just call it even.
We give,
it should be done.
We give Israel $3 billion a year. We just learned yesterday that Google's contract with Israel is $2.1 billion.
Mm.
So basically we pay.
We give Google. They use different money for that.
Oh, yeah.
So don't worry about that. Mm. Here's some more Mike Johnson.
Look, history judges us for what we do. This is a critical time right now, a critical time on the world stage. I could make a, you know, I could make a selfish decision and do something that that's different. But I'm doing here what I believe to be the right thing. I think providing lethal aid to Ukraine right now is critically important. I really do. I really do believe the intel and the briefings that we've gotten that I believe Xi and Vladimir Putin and Iran really are an axis of evil. I think they're in coordination on this. I think that Vladimir Putin would continue to march through Europe if he were allowed. I think he might go to the Balkans next. I think he might have a showdown with Poland or one of our NATO allies. To put it bluntly, I would rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys. My son is going to begin in the Naval Academy this fall. This is a live fire exercise for me, as it is so many
Live fire exercise for wartime speaker Mike Johnson.
You can't convince me that's not AI.
He looks like AI.
God, okay. Yeah, I mean, like, his hair, there's not a single hair out of place.
No. The glasses are just to conceal the eye. AI is not great at eyes. It's pretty good, but normally you can tell with the eyes. So I think that's why they put glasses in the computer, in the software, over the top of his eyes. Okay, one thing, he used the word axis of evil, and I didn't realize it was 2003, but apparently we've dialed the clock back 21 years, something like that, because we got China, Iran, and Russia. And the axis of evil.
And Putin's just going to march through Europe.
Mm-hmm. It's so... Putin can't even make it through northeast Ukraine, but we're supposed to believe that he's just going to not only march all the way through Ukraine, and then he's going to march through Europe after that.
He can't make it because of the United States support.
We gave him that money.
We gave him bullets.
Yeah, I mean, that could be partially true. Let's say that that's partially true. Yeah. Sure. We've allowed
them. Do you really think Putin would attack Poland or a NATO ally? There's no way.
I don't.
There's no way. That would be the stupidest thing that that guy could do. And unless he, I mean, he could be, you know, like a Hitler type person where he just wants to see the whole world burning.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily a win for, you know, he doesn't care about winning. Just that the fact that the whole world's burning, that's possible. But
I don't think that's it.
But I don't think that's it. No.
Is he a good person? No.
No.
I don't think he's Hitler. But he's also not a good person. But
I mean, we just learned he jailed one of his political opponents.
Well, sure. Okay. Of course. Yeah. Of course he did.
That's in the tyrannical playbook.
Are we talking about Biden or Putin?
Oh.
which one are you talking about?
Putin.
Putin. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I thought we shifted
Don't
on
confuse
to
that with
topic.
Biden price hikes.
Yeah, sorry. Biden price hikes. That's what he's blaming everything on in Russia, probably. Yeah. The Biden price hikes. Okay. The other thing is, before we move on to dumb bleep number two, I tweeted this out yesterday. When it comes to this $95, $100 billion, whatever it is that we're putting out there, I've had no one explain to me, and I've seen no one explain, how $60 billion to Ukraine is going to turn the tide of the war and stop Russia in its tracks and regain territory for Ukraine, that this is somehow going to solve the problem. It's just another $60 billion in 6 months, end of the year, maybe something like that. They'll need another $60, $100 billion, whatever it is. And we're just going to keep milking it. We're just going to keep doing it. With Israel, even less so, I've heard no one talk about how Israel is in this dire financial condition and they just cannot fight off Hamas unless we give them $15 billion or whatever the number is.
Here's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
We'll solve all the problems. Let's print $100 trillion.
Okay.
And just give everybody... all the money they could possibly need for every country, and we'll just build this thing up, man.
Problem solved. Why not go for total peace?
Yeah.
You know, why are we doing
half
measures?
Give Russia some.
Sure. You know? Sure. Keep them happy.
Yeah. We just, well, how many countries are there?
Too many. I don't know. How many? 300?
Close to 200?
I don't know. Can someone guess a number?
I think it's close.
I don't know how many countries there are.
I think it's close to 200. Yeah, so let's print.
Are you talking developed nations? Or?
No, I'm just saying let's print $200 trillion and just give everybody a trillion.
Okay. That sounds good.
And then it's fine. That should solve, that would be everything. They would solve homelessness with that.
No more homelessness.
They would solve war problems with that.
No hunger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would there be inequality? Solve inequality?
There'd be no religion.
Okay. Too. All right. I gotcha. Huh. No possessions?
No possessions. Okay. Everybody would, well, except for the $1 trillion, everybody would have $1 trillion
in their possession. Okay, yeah. That's Dumbly number one. We got to go. Speaking of, look at this segue, natural segue right into something that Nina Turner posted. Now, she's probably right about the first sentence, which honestly is better than she normally does. So congrats to Nina Turner. She says American elected officials have billions for war. This is in response to the money that we're about to give out that we were just talking about. Doubly number one. How about that? Then she says, meanwhile, and she posts a screenshot of an answer from Google. How much would it cost to end homelessness? And you know how Google kind of gives you that answer at the top. This is the screenshot of that answer. It says, according to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, it would cost $20 billion to end homelessness in the United States.
For one day.
It wouldn't even, I mean, even PolitiFact is like, no, it's not even close at all. Okay, no. But this, I try to imagine being somewhere, someone who's got, you know, the amount of followers she does, and she's on TV a bunch on some channels that no one watches, and she spends a lot of time talking about this stuff, and then actually thinking the $20 billion is going to end homelessness. Let me just give you this little example right here. This is the yearly budgets for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. You know what one of their jobs is? Housing. It's one of the
ending homelessness.
It's in the name, making sure that people can be housed. Mm-hmm. It's like one of their main jobs, actually. It's why it's in the title of their department. You just say from 2015, they're spending $45 billion. They're spending for a little under 50 for a few years. Right now, it goes up to 2023 up at around $63 billion. Their 2024 budget is $72 billion. And this quote that she posts out is from an estimate that HUD made in 2012. And that's when they said that ending homelessness would cost $20 billion. Since 2012, Housing and Urban Development has spent $600 billion, and their current budget is about $30 billion more per year than they were spending in 2012. Yet people will still grab a screenshot that says HUD says it would cost $20 billion to end homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to listen to the experts.
Yeah. How does that not trigger like an error in someone's head? Like, oh, they spent $600 billion since they posted that it would cost $20 billion.
And we still have homeless.
And we have the same amount of homelessness that we did at that time. I think the total homelessness is...
I'm about to be homeless.
Yeah, look at you. You know, not chronically homeless, but temporarily, you know. That's why you're keeping that flag for warmth, you know.
Yeah.
You got to cover yourself. Okay, number three, we can go real quick. We just talked about this yesterday. So we would tell you to go back to yesterday's episode and listen to the last 10 minutes. Or I put a clip up on YouTube of this conversation from yesterday. What is it, Charlie?
All right, Robert Reich III. Look at this chart. This is what the Trump tax cuts for the rich have done. This is what they want to double down on. It's a scam in plain sight. And he posted a chart from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, CBPP.org.
CBPP.
CBPP.org.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite websites.
Basically, it shows that the top 1% saved an average of $61,000 in federal taxes, while the lowest quintile saved $70.
And therefore,
that is an income disparity.
Therefore, the rich... benefited more from the Trump tax cuts. By the way, these are households, not individuals. So that's important for the next thing, which is also what we talked about yesterday. The idea is, well, look, the top 1% benefited way more than the people in the lowest quintile. Mm-hmm. But Charlie, what do we know?
They did this in dollar amounts rather than percentages.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually found out that the bottom 50% of taxpayers saw the most benefit.
Yeah. On a percentage basis.
Yes.
For what their tax percentage was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you use
they
dollars,
were already paying nothing and they paid more nothing.
A little less than nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the best way of looking at it. The top 1%. Now, this is per taxpayer, not per household. The last one was per household. So per taxpayer in the top 1%, the average income taxes paid is $653,000. And in the bottom 50%, it is $667. And that's not even the lowest quintile.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lowest halftile.
That is, is that a 0.1% of what the top 1% pays?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, wow. 0.1, I think.
Yeah.
What that would be. And so, yeah, it turns out that when you cut taxes, even if you cut it the same amount, let's say that you cut it by 1%, and I'm not saying one nominal percent, I'm saying 1% lower than what it was, the people in the top 1% would see the largest benefit in dollars from the tax cut itself. So, yeah, this is just lying, is what that's called. Oh, nice. Now we get the chief.
Speaking of lying.
Yeah. Segwaying like nobody's business in here. Let's get to Chief Warren. Where's she at?
It's been a while since she's been part of the Dumb Bleep.
It is. It's finally time. There we go. We need some input from the Native American community.
She looks Indian.
Let's talk to her.
Green techs on iPhones, they're ruining relationships. That's right. Non-iPhone users everywhere are being excluded from group texts, from sports teams chats to birthday chats to vacation plan chats. They're getting cut out, missing out on plans and conversations. And who's to blame here? Apple. That's just one of the dirty tactics that Apple uses to keep a stranglehold on the smartphone market.
Yeah, blame the
Apple
fruit.
Apple has used its monopoly on smartphones to lock Americans into services and amass billions of dollars in profits. Apple even takes a cut every time you use Tap to Pay and has blocked a new app that would have let Android users finally use iMessage and get those blue texts. That's why last month the Department of Justice sued Apple for its broad-based exclusionary conduct. And that's the right thing to do. It's time to break up Apple's monopoly now.
We can just end it here. This is it.
Honestly, man.
We don't need another one.
We have it. We have it so good if Chief Karen herself is
a
out
senator
there. Yeah, out there.
Of the United States of America.
She's talking about green text excluding people from conversations. And I just want to say, first off, if you get left out of conversations and they tell you it's because you have an Android, they're lying to you, you suck, and they don't want to talk to you, okay? That's the actual answer.
Or sometimes because you
because
have,
if
sometimes
you're,
because you ruin the group.
I mean, it does ruin group messages. Let's be honest. Mm. I'm in, like with Lacey's family, someone in there doesn't have an Apple. And when you hit like something, like you like it, it says Nate liked this. Like it's really terrible to have someone ruin your message. But guess what? We still talk, and there have been no conversations about a separate group text message with only the Apple users where we can talk about family business with our blue text messages, because we're just talking because we care about talking to each other. I'm just telling you, if they're keeping you out, then you're just not important to them, and that's the problem that needs solved in your life.
No.
Okay?
No, we need to break up Apple's monopoly on iMessage. That's what we need to do.
This is the thing that she's concerned about.
This is the problem we have.
This is the thing.
Apple's exclusionary practices. This is discrimination.
It is. It
discrimination is. Against.
This probably disproportionately affects minorities, I bet.
Yeah.
We need to look into this. Mm. We probably got civil rights violations with this one. Okay. Everyone knows
why
that's dumb.
Apple's entire job is to try to make billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So of course they're going to have, every company has exclusion. Like, hey, we want you to work with us,
mm-hmm.
not anyone else. Cause like we want you to work with us. And if you work with us, you get these benefits.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
do you guys know that this microphone right here, this Shure SM7B doesn't work as well as easily with this Rode soundboard that we're using right now? You see, Rode has specific buttons you can click on that just change all the settings to where it sounds the best with the microphone that you select. This Shure SM7B is one of the most popular microphones out there. but there's not a button for it. You know why? Because Rode has a bunch of their own microphones. And so you
good can, quality microphones.
They're good microphones. They're fine, but you can plug those in and then you can hit a button and it makes that microphone just sound amazing. You see me like an idiot. I have to go into the settings, just look and make a fool of myself.
And it's green text.
Clicking buttons. The text is a different color. It's all messed up. Honestly, it is discrimination. No, yeah. People, yes, Apple iPhones are made to communicate better with Apple iPhones. It's easier. It just is. It's more secure. All right. It's less customizable. You don't get to put your, I don't know, widget wherever you want.
Do we have to go on?
No. I think this is it. No, let's go. Yeah, we do. This is, oh, sorry, breaking news, everyone. I got to let you know. We'll spend a minute on this one. Breaking news, sorry. We have to cut into our regularly scheduled programming to let you know that Trump just looked at something on a cell phone and then he handed it to his attorney during this hush money trial. Let's dig in deeper. Mm. Trump, to get into the story, this is the entire story, not the caption on the photo. Trump just looked at something on a cell phone and then he handed it to his attorney. Susan. Susan is his attorney's name. Okay, you can now return to your regularly scheduled programming. That was dumb bleep number 5.
Was that the whole article?
Yeah, that was
it. Oh, man. See, you have to be in speculation news business these days. You can't just...
Well, you know, let's expand on this.
They're reporting on a fact there. I mean, he looked... As far as I can tell, he looked at a phone.
Oh, hold
and then
up.
Handed it to his attorney.
I'm just getting word that Trump has shifted slightly to the left. Okay, everyone go back to your regularly scheduled. Look at that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You like that,
Let's
don't
expand
you?
Expand on this. What do you think was on the alleged cell phone?
Might have been Stormy's OnlyFans.
It was probably a picture of Stormy Daniels. That's what I'm guessing. Yeah, that's what it was.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. He opened up his secret photo app. And we're showing her photos that he keeps of Stormy Daniels on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I wonder if they ever saw this one. You know, and then that was it. Mm. That was the whole story. Yeah, that's what I figured it was, too. Maybe it was a picture of the nuclear launch codes that he took, you know, when he still had all the documents.
Maybe it was a blow-the-waist selfie of himself.
Could have been a D-pic.
Yeah.
A Trump.
Like, you want to see why Stormy Daniels agreed to this?
It was Donald.
Susan.
It was Donald's Trump.
Suzanne.
I don't know, Suzanne.
Donald's Susan. Trump.
Anytime you say first name, possessive form, and then last name.
Yeah.
Like, you guys want to see Charlie's Thompson?
Yeah.
You know what it sounds like.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, let's move on to dumb bleep number 6. It turns out saying the words... Did you know that we have a racist podcast, by the way?
We do?
Yeah.
Liberty?
No. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning is a racist thing to say. I know that you're not up... on everything here, Charlie. So I think it's best we go to some of the experts in the field and we talk to this person and we see what they have to say.
So let's talk about where the word good morning originated from. Good morning. All right. So during slavery times, when the women used to mourn about their child being taken away and sold to a different slave master, or if one of the family members did something that resulted into them getting whipped or killed, most of these things used to happen in the evening time when a child was sold off or somebody was getting whipped for something. The black women used to cry all night behind it. Not even just the women, the black people in general, all the black slaves, male or female. When something happened to a family member or a close friend or anything, they used to cry all night behind it. And when the slaves used to cry about what happened all night long, the white slave master, the oppressors, will wake up in the morning time and they'll tell the slaves, did you have a good morning? Basically, did you have a good cry out? Did you do enough crying last night because of what happened to their family member a day prior? So the white oppressors came up with good morning as a mockery towards black people during the slavery times when they used to cry and mourn and grieve over what happened to somebody when they was whipped or killed or taken off to another plantation.
Taken off.
So it was their way to make fun of the black slaves crying.
Oh my God.
So we're going to have to take that into account, I think, when we talk about our podcast name, Good Morning Liberty, I think. assuming that she's being serious, and I do apologize if I assumed gender, assuming that she's being serious, this is definitely dumb and definitely ridiculous. And I think that constantly giving people this ability to have a victim mentality makes them, Charlie, look around for every possible thing that could put them in that victimhood status, and all the way down to good morning, that's where we've made it. I know. I think all words are racist, honestly, because slave masters did use a lot of words. So not as many words. It was like more educated people, but we'll have to look at all the different words that they used.
Yeah.
So we don't use them anymore. More to come on Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. We will finish up this conversation and get into some more Dumb Bleep of the Week when we get back. Okay. All right, are you good?
I'm just looking up where good and morning come from. So
yeah,
the etymology of the word good can be traced back to the old English word good.
Unless the English had slaves.
God with an elongated O. The word is believed to have derived from the Proto-Germanic word godas, which meant fitting or useful. Over time, the meaning and usage of good
found slaves to be useful
have evolved. But has always been associated with qualities such as morality. Is that morality? Sorry, cut off there. And good is often associated with qualities such as righteousness, virtue, and moral excellence.
Well, which those are aspects of white supremacy.
Yeah.
So,
the word mourning. is from an old English Fwang. Alfred, like A.E. Fwang.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
The earliest known use of the word mourning is in the Middle English period of 1150 to 1500.
A lot of slaves during that time.
Yeah. The earliest evidence for mourning is from around 1275 in The Owl and the Nightingale. Mourning is formed with English by derivation. So,
okay, well, I guess, you know, we fact checked it live and it turns out it's true. So, okay, there's
the English, number six. Did they have black slaves back in 1275?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure because I'm a white oppressor and I've never felt the need to look up that kind of thing. So I'm not really sure. Anyway,
I bet she's got a bunch of comments. We're like, yeah, go queen, princess.
Yes, queen.
Yes, queen. Tell your truth.
Slay.
Tell your truth. I showed Nate a video today of this, you know, the whole, your perception is actually your projection.
That so video is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you perceive yourself as a victim, you'll find anything to corroborate your stance, your manifestation as a victim.
You will.
It's like the world will present itself to you and you will find that evidence.
Yep.
Which is why, you know, people talk about setting goals and doing all this stuff. It's actually really important because you can take in, you can only take in so much information. And so we live in a world now where somebody can sit around and think of the word good morning and find a way for it to be oppressive.
Yeah. As
no wonder, you know, when I was gone, I was walking the halls at this resort, and as I'd pass people, I would just say good morning to them.
Yeah. And you didn't realize how much you were offending them at that time.
Some people would say it back, and other people would just
see us probably, but
yeah. Well, these were, you know, they look like tourists.
Okay.
So I was just saying, hey, good morning. I was just trying to be cheerful. And
those fellow white people saying that back and forth.
Some people seemed like they were from the Northeast, like Pennsylvania, New York. They just kept walking, you know. Other people were like, oh, good morning. They put a little smile on their face.
Yeah.
But now I know why, probably.
They were happy. They were probably from the South. And they were like, yeah. Good morning. They were winking at you.
And other people knew what this actually meant. And they clearly saw that I was a racist white guy walking around.
Well, unfortunately, she let the cat out of the bag, so we're going to have to find different words. Number seven, we got to speed it up here because we got four more, and the last one is one that you definitely have to talk about.
Okay, let's go.
So we
Mark Cuban.
Number seven, Mark Cuban. This happened on tax day. He said, I pay what I owe. Tomorrow I will wire transfer to the IRS $288 million. This country has done so much for me. I'm proud to pay my taxes every single year. He says, tag a former president that you know doesn't, probably talking about Trump more than likely. He then says it was the wrong number. It was actually a little bit less. He said, I was wrong by number yesterday. Got the final number and the wire is complete. Wanted to be accurate. Do I expect all of it to be used wisely? Of course not. But I'm still proud to be able to give back to our country. I've said it for years. After military service, paying your taxes is the most patriotic thing we can do.
How much did the IRS pay him to tweet this?
There's a couple things. One, the amount of money that he paid is about 25 minutes worth of government funding. So thanks. Although his funding has already run out during the time of this podcast, but it's too bad. But
he wired it, and then 25 minutes later, it was gone.
That was it.
Yeah.
It was already gone.
It was gone.
But they would have put him in prison if he wouldn't have wired it. This last line he said, I really take issue with. After military service, paying your taxes is the most patriotic thing we can do. Mm-hmm. Just like Thomas Jefferson intended, you know, just like the framers drew it up.
Right. Yeah.
Paying money to your government forcefully under penalty of
if that's true,
death.
We would all still be English.
Yeah.
We would all still pledge allegiance.
There's been no need for the revolution in the first place.
We would sing God Save the King now.
Yeah.
You know, at all of our games instead of the Star Spangled Banner. You know, we would be an entire country of English.
Okay, we will we'll move on. Oh man, we got this UBI thing too. So this, I somehow stumbled on to UBI Twitter, Universal Basic Income Twitter, and there's people who just post about UBI all the time.
That's it.
There's the UBI guy, and there's this guy. They probably sell some kind of UBI course or something like that. That's what it seems like anyway.
Yeah,
but that's all they talk about. And this guy says, have those opposed to universal basic income ever truly considered its potential? A UBI world is where bandwidth currently consumed by financial stress is instead channeled into solving global crises. Poverty isn't intractable. It's a choice we're making every day we delay UBI. And he's got this picture for those of you that are listening. It says, here's your mind, what you're thinking about before basic income. And the biggest thing is money to live. And then little things are enjoyment, meeting people, self-improvement, help community, short-term goals, stuff like that. And then after basic income, you see, you don't have to worry about that money to live anymore. Now you're just thinking about helping your community, self-improvement, enjoyment, innovation. You're going to innovate for no apparent reason. You're going to meet people and set long-term goals. Stuff like that. And so this is your brain on UBI. Mm-hmm. That's how much better people would be. There's one problem with this idea, which is where would the UBI come from? Because they would
Well, there's another problem, though, still, is that would become the new zero.
That's Charlie, you're just not thinking about this clearly. He's already responded to a different UBI guy has responded. Read the response to this propaganda that you just spewed out.
Try to see UBI as resetting zero, creating a new floor that everybody starts at somewhere above zero. It doesn't have to be fancy, just not an absolute zero. With UBI, a deadbeat would still be cut off from a very desirable life, would still struggle in a state of relatively unfulfilling subsistence. Anybody who wants to live a better life, pretty much everyone, would have to work for it. But if they didn't, they wouldn't be resigned to abject suffering, which, by the way, is more expensive to implement than UBI, with what we pay for jail, police, hospitals, crimes. So UBI would solve
all those things.
Jail, police, hospitals. You wouldn't need a hospital anymore. Crime, poverty. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. UBI is just lifting the bottom rung of life's ladder up out of the absolute muck and grime. We've already done that, by the way, in America.
Yeah. The thing that he doesn't get is that he starts off actually almost at the answer. He says, try to see UBI as resetting zero, creating a new floor that everybody starts at. Now, what he thinks is that the new floor is going to be $1,000 a month and that everything's going to stay the same, but that everyone's going to have $1,000 a month. And so that's as low as you can go. Whatever you can buy with $1,000 a month, like that's your floor life. but he's actually right in his very first seven words where he says, try to see UBI as resetting zero. The $1,000 becomes zero, and you can get nothing more with your $1,000 that you could get with $10 beforehand. This is when everyone is getting UBI. Now, what they also...
By the way, your rent just went up by $959.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Now, they try to... And then they're not even talking about where...
Well, we just need rent control.
Where does the money come from for the UBI? Oh, tax corporations. Great. Where do corporations get their money? Oh, they sell stuff to people. Where are people going to... What money are people going to use to buy things? Oh, they use UBI. Oh, where does UBI come from? Oh, it comes from the corporations. Oh, where do corporations get their money? Oh, see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
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 Doesn't work, really. Mm-hmm. They try to use this evidence, and what they do is they give you these small studies where 130 people got UBI of $500 a month. That's not enough to affect the entire economy when you give 130 people $500 a month. When you give 100 people $500 a month or whatever it is, when everyone is getting this, it does become the new zero. And it is just as valuable as zero after that because it's the new zero, literally.
You need to get, like, if they're going to do these studies, it needs to be like an entire town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like find like an isolated town, give everyone in that town and see what happens to the prices of everything.
Yeah.
In that town. Everything's going to go up.
So,
and it basically is going to be zero.
It's very important that you're on this conversation. We're going to skip through number nine and skip to number 10. And, yeah, here we go.
Oh God.
let me see what I did here. Hold on. Let me see what happened. All right. Yeah. We'll start with number 10 here and then I'll still cover number nine. That's right. Good. But Charlie, here you go.
So Biden demands the WNBA, that's wrong. That's it. Should be WNBA players paid fair share after Caitlin Clark's deal. Joe Biden is weighing in on the pay disparity between men and women basketball players and demanding that women are paid their fair share after it was revealed just how massive a pay difference there is between WNBA and NBA rookie contracts. Women in sports continue to push new boundaries and inspire us all. But right now we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. The internet lit up after it was revealed 22-year-old basketball sensation Caitlin Clark, first picked in the WNBA draft on Monday, would earn just $76,535 in her first WNBA season as part of her rookie contract with the Indiana Fever. By comparison, the number one men's draft pick, Victor Wembanyama, earned $12.160680 million in his first season with the San Antonio Spurs. It's time that we give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons and ensure women are paid what they deserve. So now, first of all, there are women, I guess. We know what a woman is. Daughter.
For today's purposes, we are assuming that there is, in fact, such a thing as women. Yes.
Yeah.
Nina Turner.
Do you know how much?
Yeah, we're about to talk. I got all of it.
Oh, my God.
I have all of it.
I just can't.
Turner also posted out, it's time for women athletes to get their whole damn dollar. My God. And this is in response to Angel Reese, her contract.
You know, maybe if they play with the proper size ball.
That's it. They need to make the ball bigger.
Yeah. They play with a men's ball. Mm-hmm. That way it doesn't go in the hoop as easily.
Yeah.
You know, their ball goes in the hoop easier. It's smaller. You know?
Caitlin Clark. I will be honest. The contracts are lower than I thought that they were. It is. I were Caitlin Clark, I would be like, I want... legal, like, no one can release what I'm getting paid. This is embarrassing.
But here's the thing. The WNBA still can't afford that.
I know. Let's see. Here you go, Charlie. Here's some stuff.
All right. What is the NBA financial backing and subsidies for the WNBA? The NBA provides the WNBA with an annual endowment of over $15 million. This financial support helps cover various operating costs for WNBA teams, including facilities, travel, marketing, and administration. As of 2023, the NBA owns 50% of the WNBA, while the 12 WNBA teams collectively own the other 50%. The shared ownership underscores the NBA's commitment to women's basketball. Here's the problem.
Here's the
WNBA's lack of profitability.
Let's see here. Here's NBA versus WNBA, Charlie.
All right. So the NBA revenue is $10 billion. The WNBA revenue is $60 million. Average salary is $9.6 million compared to $102,000 for the WNBA. Ticket price, $94 for the NBA, $47 for WNBA. Highest paid player, Stephen Curry, $48 million. The highest player for the WNBA is Jewel Lloyd, $228,000.
You ever heard of Jewel Lloyd?
Nope.
Hmm.
Never heard of her.
Sexism is what that is.
The average viewership in 2022, the NBA Finals had 12.4 million viewers. And in 2022, the WNBA Finals had 412,000 viewers. The average attendance for the NBA is a little over 17,000. And for the WNBA, 5,679.
Honestly, that number is shocking.
It actually is.
Yeah. 5,679.
Is that just ticket? People aren't actually showing up.
Yeah, it's probably just charity buying tickets, something like that. They buy them for their entire family and no one comes. Okay, anyway, so we got that. We got some other stuff too. Hold on, don't worry. Remember, this is sexism or whatever.
All right. Which league makes more money, the NBA or the WNBA? It's the NBA by a landslide. In total, there are 1,230 NBA games during the regular season. There are at maximum 105 playoff games if each series were to max out at 7 games. In a WNBA season, there are 204 matchups between teams as each team plays 34 games, 4 against in-conference competition and 3 against out-of-conference competition. There is a possibility of 35 postseason games if each series maxed out at 5 games.
Well, that's the problem. They just aren't doing enough games.
They play less games.
Yeah, they just need to do 7 times the 6 times the amount of games.
Yep.
There you go.
So we already did the revenue. They 60 million in revenue, while 12.3 million of that revenue is distributed to its players. The NBA's 30 teams, they generate 10 billion in revenue, which is up 35% from 2018. NBA players are guaranteed at least 53% of league revenue.
Huh. Okay. Let's see here. Mm. We got more profitable stuff here. I don't know if this is all super important things. 2018, the NBA was third in TV advertising revenue generated during the postseason, generating an incredible $970 million. They trailed only the NFL and the NCAA in TV advertisement spent on a league.
They trailed the college players.
Yeah. It fails to be a contest when comparing to the WNBA. The WNBA fails to generate even 1% of the NBA's $8 to $9 billion in revenue. Let's see. 2022 NBA Finals had 13% fewer viewers compared to that. This was written in 20. So the moral of the story is, Charlie, we don't have to go through any more of this stuff.
All the women complaining.
Yeah.
That the WNBA players don't make as much are the same ones who will still never watch a WNBA game.
Apparently.
Yes.
Because they could fix this problem overnight if they
now,
wanted to.
I will say Caitlin Clark may change that landscape.
Possibly.
Because in the last couple of games, Iowa in the NCAA Final Four, they averaged, I think it was about 12 and a half million viewers.
I think they got like 4 million viewers, something like that. But I don't know.
Like 12 and a half million.
We'll check it out. We'll see who's right.
Yeah. I'm just saying that there's a possibility.
I know everyone says she's good, but to be fair, she's playing against a bunch of women. So I'm not that impressed.
I'm just saying it's a possibility that viewership could potentially increase for the WNBA.
Possibly.
Which is what they need, by the way, to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
No one is against women making more money in basketball, except for women.
They're not watching it.
Because they're not watching. They're not going.
And so the annoying part here is
women could solve this problem for women.
They're not going to. They want men to solve this problem for women by giving them more money that they're not earning.
Yes.
Because apparently that's a woman's mantra these days. That's all they want
to
do.
To get the biggest return on the littlest investment.
Smallest investment, not to actually have to do the work. They just want money to show up at the doorstep.
All because they have a P word.
That's it. That's all the value, apparently, that they have because they can't bring people to watch them play sports. And that's sad, I guess, if you're a woman and you can't even get women to come watch you. But I am super annoyed by people like Nina Turner and even Joe Biden who are saying that they're not getting paid their whole dollar. Or Joe Biden saying that they're just not getting paid their fair share. They're getting paid more than their fair share.
Literally.
The NBA
is subsidizing.
Subsidizes the WNBA. Why don't you take away what the NBA is paying them and then see what their salaries go to? They get more than they, quote, deserve, or at least more than they've earned from the revenue for their league. It's the same thing when it came to soccer. We talked about soccer so much. Mm-hmm. It takes the men to subsidize the women. They are getting paid more than their actual fair share because they're taking money from the men.
And it's actually, we have given our daughters the same opportunities as our sons.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, our sons have helped subsidize the opportunities
because
the WNBA would not exist without the NBA.
They wouldn't. I didn't realize it was actually a part of the NBA. I didn't know that until I was doing this research that the NBA owned 50% of the WNBA.
They had to sell it.
That's how they started it.
Yes. Otherwise, they wouldn't exist at all.
So that is that's technically dump leap number 10. We skipped over number 9 because Charlie wasn't going to have time to be here for it.
But now I do.
Then we had a power outage. Charlie took care of his other thing he had to take care of during the power outage. And now we're back and we can talk about number 9. This is something we might have talked about last year sometime, but there's this guy named Dexter Taylor who was just found guilty. Jury convicted him for making his own firearms due to the city's prohibition on ghost guns. Might be the state's prohibition on ghost guns.
Ever since I was a kid, I really, like most kind of red-blooded American kids, I was interested in guns and, you know, tanks and fighter planes and because it was cool. And so, but maybe 3-4 years ago, maybe I became really interested in gunsmithing. Really traditional and really kind of, and possibly even leading to a second career. You know, I've been a software developer forever, but I also make stuff. Fast forward a bit. I started actually building weapons. I started building firearms. I found out that, yeah, you can actually legally buy a receiver and you can machine that receiver to completion and you buy your parts and you put together and you've got a pistol or a rifle. And once I saw that, I was hooked. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Yeah, I started doing that. And there was no subterfuge. It's like I bought them on my credit cards under my name because they were my weapons that I built. At a certain point, the state of New York took an interest. And in April of 2022, a joint SWAT ATF task force raided my house, like broke down my door and everything. I'd gone to bed listening to an audiobook, woke up and I heard voices that were not the audiobook. And then I heard a bang. And then I heard, you know, where am I? Police, don't warm it up. You know, that kind of sound. And I saw weapon lights flickering under the door of my bedroom. So first thing I did was I said, hello, hello, hello. I thought they had the wrong place, you know, because it never occurred to me that like, that someone quietly sitting at home manufacturing rifles or pistols or whatever would be a problem that New York State was like, we've got to go and get this. It just never occurred to me that anyone would come up in my house like that. I have a clean criminal record, right? I'm a member in good standing of my local gun range. I'm like 50 some odd years old. I'm gainfully employed. I've lived in Brooklyn forever.
He's facing, I don't think they've sentenced him yet, but he's facing up to 18 years in prison.
Wow.
For making some of his own guns in his basement.
Just another way to be racist against black people.
Now that I am in this fight, it's a fight that has to be fought. Because as far as I'm concerned, this is a civil rights issue. New York State has no more right to tell me that I may not keep and bear arms than it has to tell me I have to sit in the back of the bus. Or it has no more right to tell me that I can't manufacture weapons at home quietly. One of the most traditional things you could possibly do as an American. Then they have to tell me to enter by the colored entrance.
That man has some principles.
He does. Yeah, pretty cool guy.
Yeah, he said if I can't stay out of prison, then I'll settle for embarrassing the liberals and progressives who run our cities.
And it's going to be really interesting with his civil rights argument. I mean, I don't know if they can try, and you know, the Bruin case was a New York case, and maybe this one could be seen by the Supreme Court as well. I mean, it is interesting that in one state you can put together some guns in your basement like a good American is supposed to, and in another state, doing the exact same thing can get you put in prison for 18 years.
Ugh.
Don't we all have the same natural protected rights by the Second Amendment? And is this a Second Amendment case? And I clearly it is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Let's get the votes in, everyone. Number one was Mike Johnson, wartime speaker. Number two was housing and urban development, $20 billion to end homelessness. Number three, tax cut benefits from Robert Reich. Number four, Chief Karen and the green text discrimination. Number five, Trump looking at his phone, breaking news. Just the ridiculous nature of that mattering whatsoever. Number six, good morning is racist. Number seven, Mark Cuban, patriotic to pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. Number eight.
Second only to being a soldier.
Yeah, that's it. Number eight, UBI. Number nine, Dexter Taylor. And number 10, WNBA, getting paid their fair share. So you got 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Good morning, being racist.
Just like our podcast.
Is the winner.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.